Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Go to carbonite.com, and before you do anything else, enter the offer code ROADS. You will always have peace of mind that you will never lose anything valuable on your computer ever again. That's carbonite.com, offer code ROADS.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Sam Litzinger. Federal investigators are going over the data recorders from that commuter plane that slammed into a house last night in Clarence, New York, killing 50 people. Steve Gelander with the National Transportation Safety Board says bad weather may be to blame.
The crew discussed significant ice buildup, ice on the windshield and leading edge of the wings.
Other experts say that's consistent with the plane coming down so fast. Some people connected to the crash are looking for comfort in their faith.
I'm Steve Cathan in Clarence, New York.
And I'm just happy that it was fast and that she didn't suffer.
Jennifer Ventner came to church here to mourn her best friend, a victim of the Flight 3407 crash. Pastor Carl Eastlack says the community has come together but is struggling.
Well, how come in the Hudson they live and this one they don't? And man, you just get all these swirling sights. A lot of people today are wrestling with that.
He told the congregation, we're all in this together.
There was another plane crash, this one at London City Airport. A British Airways plane slammed into the runway, but everyone on board was evacuated safely. It's up to the Senate now to finish work on the 1,000-page, $787 billion economic stimulus plan. Live to CBS News correspondent Bob Foss on Capitol Hill.
After the House passed it earlier today with no Republican votes, the Senate started its vote on the stimulus bill. But because one senator must return from a memorial service for his mother, the vote could take several hours. Bipartisanship is clearly lacking. Democrat Dick Durbin noted last year, Democrats supported a stimulus bill consisting of tax cuts.
They can't ask us as Democrats to stand with President Bush when he tried to solve it and then walk out the door when we face this crisis under President Obama.
But most Republicans say they can't go along with all this spending, so the bill is passing without them. Live on Capitol Hill, Bob Fuss, CBS News.
Serious financial trouble for the company behind that nationwide salmonella outbreak. Here's CBS News correspondent John Hartshe.
Facing lawsuits and a criminal investigation over salmonella-tainted peanut products, the Peanut Corporation of America has filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy protection. The company calls it regrettable, but inevitable. This comes as a Harvard survey out today shows only one in three Americans has good or great confidence in food manufacturers or government inspectors to keep food safe. Also, nearly one in four mistakenly thinks major national brands of jarred peanut butter are involved in the recall. Not so.
The Secretary of the Army has ordered a nationwide stand-down for Army recruiters to review standards in suicide prevention procedures. Here's CBS News correspondent David Martin.
That comes out of a specific rash of suicides that occurred in one recruiting battalion that was based in Houston, Texas. And over a three-year period, five Army recruiters, all of whom had served in either Iraq or Afghanistan, committed suicide.
On Wall Street, the Dow closed down 82 points today. This is CBS News.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from the weather.
I am the weather!
Oh, yeah, it's
seen you on the news.
But you must beard him.
I'm afraid I don't. See, my Ford is ready for anything.
No car can withstand the wrath of weather.
Mine can.
What? What do you mean?
Yep. Ford and Lincoln Mercury dealers offer the Works Fuel Saver Package. And besides a Motorcraft synthetic blend oil and filter change and tire rotation, it's a complete check of belts and hoses, fluid levels, tires, brakes.
Oh, yeah? How about a little rain? Or a lot?
Our Ford and Lincoln Mercury dealers have a special low price on wiper blades.
Whoa. Kind of knocked the wind right out of me.
Oh, sorry.
The Works Fuel Saver Package is just $29.95 or less after $10 mail-in rebate. Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury parts and service. Come in, keep going. Taxes, diesel, and disposal fees extra. See your participating dealership for rebate details or visit genuineservice.com for $331.09.
A very young father in England. The story from CBS News reporter Larry Miller.
13-year-old Alfie Patton has become one of Britain's youngest dads. The four-footer's girlfriend, 15-year-old Chantel Steadman, just gave birth to their daughter, Maisie. Baby-faced Alfie says he thought it would be a good idea to have a baby. He doesn't know what diapers cost, but he thinks it's a lot. Asked whether he can support the child financially, he asked,
"What's financially?
What does financially mean?" Alfie says he doesn't even get an allowance. Britain has one of Europe's highest teen pregnancy rates. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
Someone was willing to pay a lot of money to see a lot of Madonna. An unnamed European buyer paid $37,500 for a full frontal nude photo of the then 20-year-old future superstar. It was way over the estimate of $15,000. Madonna herself earned something like $25 for posing nude back in 1979. Sam Litzinger, CBS News.
This Valentine's Day, there are two things you don't want to break: her heart and your budget. So go to Walgreens. With great prices on everything from boxed candy to fragrances and cards, Walgreens has more than enough love to go around. Everything to make your loved one's day. And with thousands of convenient locations, many open 24 hours, Walgreens is just around the corner. So there's one more thing you'll save. Time. In every way, Valentine's is sweeter than Walgreens.
People are feeling it a little more these days. The owls are getting a little more owier, and the uggs are getting just a little uglier. Shoulders and necks are tighter, and when you exercise to work it all out, the soreness can linger. Tiger Balm feels your pain. Stress can make you ache and ugh. Tiger Balm patches and ointments work fast, and they're the powerful way to conquer pain, no matter where it comes from. Go from ow to ah with Tiger Balm. Works where it hurts. Available everywhere.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Friday the 13th. No bad luck so far. Unless you consider that California's broke and whatever stimulus we get from Washington is going to be offset by the wacky Republicans and the need to raise taxes here in California. Holy cow. That's it.
I'm working 40 hours, 60 long days. And I'm highly embarrassed every time I get my pay.
Next hour, California's state controller, John Chung, will join us.
Folks to death.
And in simple terms,
and when you pay,
he's got $100 worth of bills to pay.
Damn thing left. Ain't that a bitch?
And he's only got $60 in the checking account.
Somebody doing something scary.
Ain't that a bitch?
Yeah, they are.
And whose fault is it, huh?
Got me wondering which is which.
All right, Johnny Guitar Watson, thank you very much. You got me going. You got the show started today. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, and you can call in anytime if you're listening live here on Friday. A shout-out to our weekend listeners, Seattle, Portland, and Missoula. You can communicate by email, and that's peter@peterbcollins.com. Two great reporters named Bob will join us this hour. Robert Perry from Consortium News in just a moment. Later this hour, Robert Dreyfus, who writes for The Nation and other publications. questions. We've got a lot to talk about with both Bobs. And next hour, as I mentioned, California State Controller will be here to explain just how long it's going to take to get your income tax refund, if you see it at all. We're also attempting to connect with an attorney who's been working on the state secret case here in San Francisco. That is the Al Haramein charity case. John Eisenberg is the attorney, and he'll let us know within the hour if he can join us in our second hour, about halfway through. It depends on whether the judge calls him into court or not. That case is sensitive and ongoing. Senator Bernie Sanders will be with us in our second hour, too. I recorded a comment or two with him earlier today. We talked about the stimulus package, about Republican recalcitrance, and also a little bit about state secrets and the mission creep in Afghanistan. And as usual, our third and final hour devoted to election issues. Brad Friedman on deck as usual, and Ian Sancho. Or Ion, I think, is actually how he says it. I-O-N is his name, Ion Sancho, who is the elections chief in Leon County, Florida, and a real straight shooter. He'll be joining us during the election protection hour today, too. So it's busy. Got a lot of great people to talk with, and I hope you can listen just as much as possible. And in the event the entire program isn't available to you because of your schedule or a radio station schedule, the podcast is available through the link on my homepage at peterbcollins.com. Robert Perry, a longtime reporter based in Washington, joins us now. You can read his work and the work of other great reporters at consortiumnews.com. That's an independent nonprofit website devoted to independent reporting, and if you can help them, they can always use a little extra cash. Bob Perry, how are you doing today?
Good, Peter. How are you?
Well, I'm okay, but I have to tell you, it's been a rough week, and where I'd like to start with you is the Obama Justice Department now has two strikes in my little accounting book, because on Monday they went to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals here in San Francisco and said there's no difference between the Obama position on state secrets assertions than there was on the incredible assertions made by Bush and company. And this is very distressing. It's been compounded by what I call the second strike, which is the Al Haramein charity case. This is the most unusual one, where for a minute they accidentally were given a document by the FBI that showed clearly that some of their clients had been illegally wiretapped. And when they attempted to proceed with that, the FBI said, oh, give that back, and then said, well, since you don't have that document, you can't prove that you were spied on. And Judge Vaughn Walker, a courageous jurist on the federal bench here in San Francisco, issued an order back on January 5th ordering the government to cooperate, give security clearances to the plaintiff attorneys so that they could read some of the documents that had been denied to them in the past. And then a guy waltzes into the Walker courtroom on Thursday and says, oh, no, 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 you've got to dismiss this case because of the state secret privilege. And that means there is no difference between the Ashcroft-Gonzalez Justice Department and the Holder Justice Department on this critical issue. Your thoughts?
Well, I agree with you. I think it's outrageous. I don't know why the Obama administration is pursuing those kinds of approaches. They started off on a good first step by striking down some of President Bush's excessive secrecy relating to historical records. They committed themselves to being much more open in terms of Freedom of Information Act requests.
Mm-hmm.
But then they follow up with this. Now, clearly, there's going to be a difficult period under the best of circumstances of extricating the U.S. government from a lot of messes created by President Bush and his team.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see why the Obama administration would feel would have to go down the line on this one.
Well, I agree with you. These are complex issues, and I'll bet there are some state secrets that deserve to remain that way. But to try to use these broad assertions that you cannot even have preliminary hearings in these cases, you can't allow them to be litigated because it could expose state secrets. I'm sorry. What it could expose is illegal actions and embarrassing actions by the prior administration. So why does Obama and why would Holder want to protect the wrongdoing of the last 8 years?
Well, you know, you got me. I don't know why. There has been, of course, inside Washington, a real reluctance to do anything serious about the crimes committed by the Bush administration. Despite what we now know is strong public support. This has always been treated, by the way, as one of those the Netroots crazy lefty folks out there in the country who few people want to see Bush punished for his crimes.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out, based on the recent Gallup poll that USA Today published, that that's a majority position, that the largest group want actually just a prosecutor appointed to go after some of these things. A somewhat smaller number want some kind of truth commission. And it's in the minority position is those who say, well, let's just go on and do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out that the positions that folks in Washington have tended toward, which is either do nothing or maybe we'll do a little truth commission, but we're not gonna have anyone prosecuted. And I think even Pat Leahy was saying we don't want to embarrass anybody. I don't know why.
And we've got Panetta, who was confirmed by the full Senate on Thursday, who was forced by Senator Bond of Missouri to retract his assertions that are common knowledge and known to be true, that we rendered people to foreign countries for the purpose of torture.
Right.
And that's the other case that was they attempted to shut down before the appeals court here in San Francisco this past Monday.
And the other ironic thing here is that if President Obama and his people are thinking, well, we'll get some show of bipartisanship by going soft, this is the same problem, of course, President Clinton had back in 93 when he thought he would drop all those investigations of Poppy Bush and Ronald Reagan so he'd get bipartisanship. You don't get bipartisanship this way. We're now faced with a situation tonight where the Republicans are still trying to use a filibuster to force a supermajority to get through the stimulus bill.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Sherrod Brown has to fly home or fly back to D.C. tonight from his mother's funeral to be the 60th vote.
Jeez.
Because Ted Kennedy's been ill and he can't make it. So that's the kind of thing the Republicans are forcing the Democrats to do in these hyperpartisan moves, yet it's the Democrats who are held to blame for not being bipartisan enough. And in this case, the Democrats are again bending over further backwards not to offend the Republicans.
Well, and even the New York Times today chimed in saying, you know, this bipartisanship effort is a failure, and it really just has no benefit to either side. And it is permitting the Republicans to posture as deficit hawks, as if they didn't approve blank check after blank check for Bush without any eyebrow raised about deficits. And now all of a sudden, as the country is spiraling down because of the policies of the Bush era, because of the complicity of the majority Republicans who passed all of those spending packages and tax cuts without any concern for the deficit that they created. Now that we really need to use deficit spending as the only way to restart this economy that they crashed, they're getting in the way. It's just bizarre.
But it's highly unusual to use the filibuster this way. And this is a point I tried to make in a piece I put up today.
Yeah, the ultra-radical Republicans, it's titled.
I've covered the Congress for a long time. And even in the old days, which I guess constitute the first 200 some years of our history, the filibuster was rarely used. It was used by the Southern segregationists to protect their segregation. It's been used in a few cases here and there when a party has a special concern. But what's happened, and it's really begun in 2007, is to use the filibuster by the Republicans consistently to force these 60-vote majorities on everything, including things like economic packages. That is highly, highly unusual, and it is the story that almost nobody tells in the mainstream press. This is not normal. Demanding 60-vote majorities is not how it's been in this country.
And, Bob, one of the reasons I believe they're able to get away with this time after time is that Harry Reid will not really force the issue, call their bluff, and make them actually filibuster and talk all night and read the phone book or whatever they decide to do. And so it comes to them at no expense.
Right, they should be made to show what idiots they are when they do this sorts of thing. They should not be allowed just to sort of say, we're going to do it, and then the Democrats say, okay, we'll back down if we don't get 60 votes. There should be some way to make this happen, but the Republicans have shown a willingness to tie up the entire Congress if they don't get their way, and they are now in the minority. They were defeated in 2006. They were defeated in 2008 even bigger, yet they're still trying to control the policy of this government, in a highly anti-democratic form.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and return. Read Robert Perry's piece at consortiumnews.com, and he has some companion commentaries that have been up over the past week or so that I think are also worth your attention. That's consortiumnews.com. We'll continue. Your comments are welcome at 888-5-PETER-B, the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. Hey,
we are... Tomorrow Matters is back on air Sundays from 10 to 11 a.m.
Green Talk Radio for the Central Coast.
I'm Deborah Lindsay.
And I'm Spencer Lindsay.
Join us as we dazzle you with local solutions to environmental issues.
We'll be talking about things like climate change,
green building,
alternative energy and transportation,
water conservation,
organic farming,
and bicycles,
and a whole lot more.
Join us on KRXA 540 AM, Sunday mornings at 10.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
What would life be without flowers? It would be like a birthday cake with no candles, a wedding with no ring. It would be like a graduation without friends and relatives, a promotion without a raise. Thankfully, life is full of flowers and reasons to give them. In fact, sometimes the best reason is no reason at all. And all you have to do is stop by or call Ferrari Florists and Gifts. You see, flowers from Ferrari Florists and Gifts are more personal and special because whatever you're celebrating, we can create unique arrangements from a wide selection of fresh-cut flowers, and we can deliver them the same day. So you can enjoy life and even declare your love with flowers. Call Ferrari Florists and Gifts today at 460-7000 or visit our website at www.ferrariflorist.com. And we'll help you realize the true potential of flowers. Ferrari Florists and Gifts, 514 Front Street, Santa Cruz. Experts in the art of expression.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
B. Collins Show, 23 minutes into the hour. We're talking with Robert Perry, the journalist at ConsortiumNews.com. And, Bob, as we talk about this 60-vote requirement in the Senate, just a fundamental civics lesson on the rules of the Senate, that's actually something that could be changed by a simple majority vote, right? The Democrats could use the so-called nuclear option and say, we are taking out the filibuster rule.
Right. They could do it by a majority vote. And in fact, in 2006, the Republicans threatened to do exactly that.
Mm-hmm. It was over the Roberts nomination, is that right?
Well, it was the Alito nomination.
Yeah.
Sam Alito was a radical right-wing jurist who really didn't believe in the U.S. Constitution, as most of us understand it. He believed in the unitary executive. He wanted to give the president all power during wartime, and, of course, war on terror was an endless war.
Mm-hmm.
So he really didn't believe in our Constitution, and he was going to join at least three other justices. Scalia, Thomas, and Roberts, who shared that view. And we weren't too sure about Anthony Kennedy. So it was very much a question of the future of our country as a republic was in the balance. And at that point, there were the 14 senators, the group of 14 got together, led by John McCain and some others, and they agreed to block filibusters, except in the most extraordinary of circumstances. So even though the Democrats had 42 votes against Alito as the wrong person to put on the Supreme Court,
mm-hmm.
they did not use the filibuster as an organized effort to stop it. There was a brief effort to do a filibuster because of the seriousness of the Alito nomination, but many Democrats went against it. They allowed the Alito nomination to go through despite the fact that he could not get 60 votes in favor. So that's the kind of thing that the Republicans demanded back as recently as 2006.
Yeah.
But once they lost power in 2007, they threw all that rhetoric out.
Yeah.
And they became determined to use the filibuster at every drop of a hat.
Let's talk to John in Carmel Valley. Welcome, John, with Peter B. and Bob Perry.
Tom Hartman yesterday had Harry Reid being quoted that the prime aim of his leadership in the Senate is consensus. And Tom just said, oh, no, Harry, it's not.
Right.
And I couldn't agree more. Harry Reid, as much as I've criticized Nan Pelosi, and I haven't let up on her, in fact, it's the two of them together. They are the king and queen of uselessness, and there should be just unending criticism of them amongst us. We can go out to the Republicans, but let someone else do that for now. The real saboteurs, the real quack bloodletters are these bunch of our own party, unfortunately, doing this. And we could debate endlessly as to why. I am interested in why. It's just, it's time to take off the gloves and call it for what it is. They are just adding to the frustration of these Republicans, and the Republicans must be loving it. Can you mm-hmm. imagine how ethereal it must be where they should be just repentant like those bankers in England, but they're not. They're getting a third and fourth wind on thanks to Reid and Pelosi in particular. But Reid
well,
right
and,
now.
And John, I can't remember which of my brilliant guests earlier this week, but someone offered the point that repeatedly the Democrats negotiate with themselves. And Bob Perry, on this very package, the so-called stimulus bill, one of the first things they did was throw some tax cuts in there to sweeten it for Republicans before they ever sat down with the Republicans and said, well, look, Boehner, if you give us some votes, we'll give you some tax cuts. I'm offended by having the alternative minimum tax in there. That doesn't belong in this package in any way, shape, or form. And we're still at 42% or so, the ratio of tax cuts in the stimulus package. And those will not create jobs, those will not preserve jobs, and won't do very much to help rebuild the economy, Bob.
Well, I don't really disagree with some of those points. I do think, though, that there must be more focus on the Republicans. The Republicans have gotten away with murder on this. I was just reading a piece where John McCain was saying that Obama did not do enough to get bipartisanship, and he has to be more assiduous toward the Republican positions. The American people have to say, no, we voted for something else. We rejected the Republican policies, and that has to be, I think, a very strong message. I think the Democratic leadership, I agree, and the Obama administration have to get this woolly stuff out of their heads about the possibility of having this wonderful postpartisan period. The Republicans have made it clear that ain't going to happen. Once you realize that, you have to figure out how to make it work without them.
Yeah. Well, and I think that the sooner Obama recognizes that, the better off we'll be. And based on his news conference Monday night, it doesn't seem like he's gotten there yet, Bob.
Well, I think he's learned a few things, but he should be a much faster learner. I agree with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, sir, for your comments. I want people to read your work at consortiumnews.com. You got a lot of great reporting there. And we will talk to you next week, Bob.
Thank you, Peter.
All right. Robert Perry. Coming up next, the other great Bob reporting from the Washington area, Robert Dreyfus, will join us. His work's available at thenation.com. The Peter B. Collins Show is produced in San Francisco by Katrina Reel. And Nick Tanum is here taking your calls today.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by the American Society of Retina Specialists and Genentech. I'm Charles Osgood. Friday the 13th is not generally regarded as a particularly auspicious date on the calendar, although in February we do have the reporting of catchers and pitchers for spring training. But it is not the first Orioles, Cardinals, or Blue Jays to show up that the springtime make. Rather, it is the first purple martins, wood thrushes, and other songbirds to leave their winter nesting grounds in South America and head north. Actually, they leave quite a bit later than we used to think and fly a whole lot faster.
They were flying at rates of about 400 miles per day for a period of 2 weeks, and we had no idea that they could sustain these kinds of rapid flights for such a long time.
The story after this. The most common cause of blindness in people age 60 and over is a chronic condition called wet age-related macular degeneration, AMD. It begins with symptoms including wavy lines, hazy vision, and blurriness. So if you aren't seeing clearly, by all means see an eye doctor and get checked out right away, because early detection followed by proper treatment by a retina specialist is key. This message was brought to you by the American Society of Retina Specialists and Genentech.
This Valentine's Day, there are two things you don't want to break. Her heart and your budget. So go to Walgreens. With great prices on everything from boxed candy to fragrances and cards, Walgreens has more than enough love to go around. Everything to make your loved one's day. And with thousands of convenient locations, many open 24 hours, Walgreens is just around the corner. So there's one more thing you'll save. Time. In every way, Valentine's is sweeter than Walgreens.
This is the sound of the purple martin, a little songbird that summers in the U.S. and Canada and winters in Brazil. Not only does it sing sweetly, but it flies swiftly, we now know. Larger migrating birds have been tracked for years, but only recently, says biologist Bridget Stutchbury of York University in Toronto, have they been using tracking devices weighing not much more than a paperclip.
We've been using these small tracking devices called geolocators, which record light levels. They're carried as a backpack on the birds. And the birds disappear in fall for their migration and go to their wintering grounds. And when they come back in spring, we take the little backpacks off and we download the information. And it tells us the time of sunrise and sunset every day where the birds were on their journey.
And it turns out purple martins not only sing quite well, but also, as apparent, fly like a bat out of hell.
Spring migration was much faster than we had expected. We had one bird, a purple martin, which is a kind of swallow, returned from the Amazon River area in the Brazilian rainforests, returned in under 2 weeks.
The Toronto folks are Blue Jay fans, don't have purple martins in their plans, but it's clear from how they cover spaces that they'd be great at stealing bases. The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Coming up at the top of the next hour, California State Controller John Chung will join us to explain why you shouldn't expect your income tax refund from the state anytime soon. Maybe not even this year. And will you get interest for that unexpected loan to the state of California? No.
Why don't you play the tune? I don't like music.
Somebody I never met, but in a way I know. Didn't think that you could get so much from a picture show. Man dies first, real people lost. What's the deal? This ain't how it's supposed to be. Don't I know as a rich man? Took a kiss in power, scrap, pop, star, died in hell. No thanks for screaming, shouting. Monsters came to flush him out.
Also coming up next hour, we'll recap the second embarrassment for the Obama administration, embracing the state secret position of the Bush administration. And we'll tell you about that. Plus, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders will be on with us next hour as well. So it's going to be busy. Stay tuned, and we'll bring it all to you. Robert Dreyfuss returns to our program right now. You can read his work in many fine publications, from Rolling Stone to The Nation. And he blogs frequently, updates the Dreyfuss Report at thenation.com. Bob, welcome today.
Thank you, Peter. Glad to be here.
Always good to talk with you. And I know that you have an Al Jazeera or some other interview to do, so we're going to do one long segment here and let you go well before the top of the hour.
Sounds good. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Wanted to start off with the Israeli election results. They went to their polls on Tuesday, and Zippy Livni came up with one seat more than Benjamin Netanyahu.
Nut and honey, like the old commercial.
I knew I could get it out. And so Zippy and Netanyahu are basically struggling now and juggling, trying to form a government. And from what I read, it seems that Bibi Netanyahu has a slight edge because he has more prospects of forging a right-wing coalition than she does of trying to bridge to the splinter groups on her left.
Yeah, well, the definition of right-wing in Israel is always capable of pushing to new boundaries. I mean, it wasn't too long ago that the party that Zippy Livni represents, namely Kadima, was mm-hmm. considered a pretty far right-wing collection. It was founded by Ariel Sharon, who's fell ill a number of years ago, but mm-hmm. he was considered almost the fringe of Israeli politics during the 80s and 90s. He was an extreme right-wing general.
Mm-hmm.
So he founded this Kadima party, and then it was taken over by Prime Minister Olmert and now by Livni. So that's already kind of a right-wing bunch.
Right.
Netanyahu, who was prime minister for a time in the 1990s, and I think in 1996 he was elected, he's even further to the right than Sharon and is a passionate advocate of holding on to the West Bank and Gaza, especially the West Bank, as part of a biblical mandate to the Jews. And so he's considered, pretty far out there. And then there are several parties to his right,
mm-hmm.
Some religious parties, and then, of course, this new up-and-coming, I almost want to say fascist party, run by a guy named Avigdor Lieberman, whose program basically, is to kick all of the Arabs out of what's now Israel,
mm-hmm.
and of course, to include the West Bank as part of Israeli territory. Well, so the right-wing parties, and now, again, I'm talking about Lieberman and the religious parties and Netanyahu, have about 65 seats among them, and mm-hmm. all you need is 61 to form a government. So if the parties to the left of those extremist parties are going to get into the government, it's going to be, with Netanyahu's good graces and permission, and there's no telling whether that'll happen. But the whole thing is really bad news because it basically puts into power in Israel a segment of extremists that are kind of like the extremists that run Hamas. And so basically you have the whole Palestine-Israel debate polarizing, which makes George Mitchell's job, President Obama's envoy, infinitely harder now.
And the one other player sidelined in this election is Ehud Barak, who is the current defense minister and was, you know, trying to be as hawkish as Livni and Netanyahu during the campaign. And this backdrop of the attack on Gaza that occurred during our Christmas holiday and on up through January, these, you know, were each one tried to jockey for position to be the hardliner who was toughest on Hamas. And it seems that we have no winner, but that Barak is clearly the loser.
Yeah, the Labor Party, he represents the Labor Party. And, you know, back in the early days of Israel, the Labor Party was overwhelmingly dominant. I mean, it ran the country from top to bottom. It had a big organized labor movement, the Histadrut, which is their version of the AFL-CIO. It produced a series of presidents and prime ministers and was, you know, at least on domestic policy, fairly liberal left. It's basically gone now. I mean, they've been pushed down to fourth place in Israeli politics, and they've been in kind of free fall really since the late 70s.
And so I saw an explanation on television. It's too complicated to try to replay at the moment here, but basically it's a three-stage process as they attempt to form a government, and it can take as long as another 6 weeks. And in the meantime, we have lame duck Ehud Olmert remaining in office.
Yeah, and what it means is that any government that comes in to power in Israel is going to be a coalition government. It's certainly not going to have much of a mandate to do anything beyond, you know, hold the fort.
Mm-hmm.
At worst, it could be even more aggressive, and it kind of puts the threat of some kind of Israeli actions against Iran back on the table. But you know, more locally, it makes it very, very difficult to imagine any kind of peace negotiations over the next year or so. So maybe George Mitchell can take a year off and relax. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem that he has much to work with, and I am, you know, marginally pleased that Obama considers this a high priority. He is not, like Bush, going to slough this off and try to get to it when he's concerned about a legacy. At the same time, his intentions may be on the good side, but he doesn't have much to work with.
Well, it's an interesting test, because if Netanyahu and the right wing take over, and if they start, you know, rejecting talks and expanding Israeli settlements in the occupied territories or in the West Bank, Obama is going to have to take that on, because he can't possibly let them do that without more than a, you know, a wrist slap from the United States, or he will lose any possibility he has now of restoring opinion of the United States in the Arab world and more broadly among Muslims. And so I think the new Israeli government is going to have to be extremely careful about crossing Obama until they get a sense of how he'll react, because I don't think they can afford to alienate the President of the United States at this point either.
Robert Dreyfuss with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Now let's take a look at Iran, and you posted a piece in your blog at thenation.com called Iran Opens Door for Talks. And this is against the backdrop that Ahmadinejad is up for re-election coming up this summer. And Khatami, who is well, again, we have to strain our language here, but he's a moderate in Iranian terms. He appears poised, ready to challenge Ahmadinejad.
Yeah, this is an interesting dynamic. I think that, you know, the door is now open for discussion between Iran and the United States. Both sides have said they want to talk. There have been some people in Washington, I've talked to a number of folks who advocate that the United States wait until the presidential election in Iran this summer before figuring out how to approach Iran. I think that would be a big mistake, and I think you have now the hardliners, the Ahmadinejad crowd, certainly backed by the clergy who run the country, saying, you know, we're willing to sit down and talk. So the question then becomes, you know, how to get that going and what to talk about. And I think we have to be aware that this is going to be a bumpy road. It could take a year or 2 years or more of, you know, fitting and starting and jumping and bumping until this talks get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be pressure from the right wing to, you know, be alarmist and say, well, look, Iran is about to set off its nuclear weapon and we need to, you know, hurry this along. And I think actually Obama has the luxury of relaxing and taking some time to get this right, because Iran does not have a bomb now.
Right.
It doesn't have the means to deliver a bomb. It doesn't have the refined uranium it needs to build one. It has uranium, but it would have to go through a whole new, you know, enrichment process before it could be bomb ready.
Yeah, but AQ Khan's out of the house.
Yeah, well, that's something to worry about, but
yeah.
It would take a while. And
yeah.
So, and we'd know about it, by the way, if it mm-hmm. started to happen. It isn't like they can do this in secret.
Now, with that in mind, what was your reaction to the way Obama danced at the press conference, his first formal press conference on Monday, when Helen Thomas asked him the trick question, does anybody in the Middle East have a nuclear weapon? And then she followed up with questions about Iran.
Well, that's you know, many presidents have done that same dance.
Mm-hmm.
I think it, and of course what she was getting at is that the Israelis are reported to have something like 200 nuclear weapons, maybe more, in their arsenal. It's certainly worth considering. It would be a radical notion, but it's worth considering. Putting those on the table and saying, to Iran, okay, as the price for you abandoning your nuclear effort, we'll get Israel to disarm and create a nuclear-free zone. And maybe that's some, you know, part of the end game here, but I think the Israelis would be extremely reluctant to go along with that. But it's certainly worth considering, and it's worth putting on the pressure, and it's worth turning the tables, even if the Iranians were to bring that up
mm-hmm.
in the course of these talks.
Well, and the Saudis have done so in the past. They call it a nuclear-free zone in the Middle East, and clearly they want Israel to give up its weapons.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's something that, as I say, it could be, you know, put on the table, but I think you can't afford at this point to bog the U.S.-Iran talks down just on the nuclear issue. In a way, you can put that on the back burner because there's so many important things that we need to talk to
mm-hmm.
Iran about. Support for Hezbollah and Hamas, the problems in Iraq. They can certainly help us in Afghanistan, where they have a lot of influence.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big lot of energy questions, of course, that surround Iran, including pipelines they want to build across Pakistan to India. And so there's a lot of regional energy and security and terrorism issues that we can talk to Iran about, which can be kind of, you know, confidence-building measures and maybe eventually part of some sort of grand bargain in which Iran would give up its nuclear program in response to, you know, steps that the United States would take to integrate Iran into the region and have Iran kind of secure in its rightful place. I mean, the interesting thing is that when President Obama talked about Iran, I think it was even in his inaugural address, but certainly since then, he's talked about approaching that part of the world in a sense of mutual respect. And President Ahmadinejad used those exact words, mutual respect,
mm-hmm.
in his comments the other day on the 30th anniversary of Iran's revolution in 1979. So, and that to the Iranians is very important. I mean, I was in Iran in March. I heard that from everybody,
yeah.
this notion of mutual respect. I met with Khatami
mm-hmm.
while I was there. He used those exact words, too. He wants, you know, and the Iranians generally, whatever political part of the spectrum they're on, they believe in this notion that Iran is a great nation with a great history going back to the Persian Empire of, you know, 300, 400 B.C., and therefore deserves a kind of respect that it feels like it's not getting. Now, they've done some things to lose that respect, including
Indeed.
Things like taking our embassy hostage and
mm-hmm.
things like that. But
mm-hmm.
but still, the point remains that if we're going to move forward from now, we need to let some bygones be bygones, and that includes American, you know, support for the Shah and things like that, which the Iranians hold against us.
Yeah. Bob Dreyfus with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Now let's turn to Afghanistan, because that, of course, is a very serious area of concern. As you and I have discussed, we share concerns about escalating American troop presences in Afghanistan. And Richard Holbrooke is the new, he's calling himself a representative, not an envoy. And he visited Pakistan while he was there, and on his way to Kabul, the welcome wagon, the Taliban welcome wagon was rolled out. And five or six Taliban fighters made an assault on the Justice Ministry in downtown Kabul, maintained a presence there, killing 20 people, and it took an hour and a half or so for the Afghan forces to kill those attackers. So that just brings into pretty sharp relief that the Taliban is not going to go quietly, and that they are essentially asserting their desire for control over Afghanistan. And we also learned this week, Bob, that they seem prepared to make the decision to send more U.S. troops to Afghanistan before the review of our policies and plans for Afghanistan is actually completed.
Well, yes and no. This is a very, very difficult decision that Obama has to make. During the campaign, he said that he would accept the idea of sending 2 to 3 brigades of troops to Afghanistan. So that's something like maybe 10,000 troops. And I think there have been some plans underway to send the first of those almost immediately. So that may happen. But he's also ordered a 60-day review of Afghan policy. And the military in Afghanistan has been talking since November about 30,000 troops, approximately 3 or 4 times the size of the surge that mm-hmm. Obama was kind of okay with during the campaign.
Right.
So far, as we know, he hasn't yet made any decisions on that kind of escalation. And he's getting a lot of advice from a lot of people, and I'm sure there are some people saying yes and some people saying, you know, take it very slow. I know the guy who's carrying out the review, who's in charge of this review. His name is Bruce Riddell,
mm-hmm.
and he was Obama's top advisor on Afghanistan during the campaign. And he's a pretty smart guy. He's an advocate of a limited surge, but I'm not sure he's ready to go all the way with what the military has asked for. And in fact, it's becoming more and more almost conventional wisdom that, first of all, we can't win this war militarily.
Amen.
And second, that it has to be done through some sort of modest downsizing of our goals in Afghanistan. In other words, we're not going to rebuild that society from the ground up to, you know, look like Peoria. It's a very conservative Muslim country and extremely poor and backward, and it's going to take generations to come into the 21st century. So if we downsize our goals and if we start thinking about diplomacy and talking to the insurgency, we'll find out that that Taliban that carried out these raids that you mentioned is not really some giant unified force with a command and control apparatus mm-hmm. that would, you know, make the U.S. Army look disorganized. It's really a very messy and complicated group with tribes and all kinds of components and factions, and so I think once we start moving down the diplomatic path, we'll find, just as we did in Iraq, that some of the bad guys and all of a sudden become good guys mm-hmm. and want to talk to us.
Well, maybe we can pay them to be friends of ours.
That would very much work. I think it would be a very important part of it, and certainly would be a lot cheaper than spending another 10 or 15 years there, which yeah. is really what a lot of folks are talking about.
Bob, I'm going to let you go so you can meet your other obligation. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
And vice versa. Thank you.
Robert Dreyfus. Read him at thenation.com. Click on blogs and then look for the Dreyfus Report. We'll take a break and return here on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
Ever thought about shipping your child to a remote island? Want to send them to their room for the rest of their life? I can help. I'm Mark Lecluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Dr. Chaim Barton. For the past 10 years, I've been helping parents, teens, and kids overcome challenges in their lives, and I'd like to help you too. I can work with your family to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection. I offer an affordable sliding scale, and I'm currently accepting new clients. Please call for an appointment. 831-818-4033. Parenting doesn't have to be so hard. I'm Mark Lecluse. Give me a call. 818-4033. That's
818-4033. Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service features full service, friendly, fast, same-day service. Or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Juan specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located at 4665 Soquel Drive at the intersection with Porter Street in Soquel. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Cruz. Come listen to the new Jennifer Cruz Show, Saturdays at noon, where we will get into it, I-N-T-U-I-T. We'll talk about intuition, emotions, and passions, all the invisible aspects of each and every one of us that nobody talks about. The Jennifer Cruz Show is made possible by Weiland Galleries in Carmel and Water Me Well Inner Healing Apparel. Visit watermewell.com. See you Saturdays at noon on the new Jennifer Cruz Show. Remember, Saturdays at noon, only on AM 540. Get into it.
Wide open Robinson for a three off the inbound. Two for two, Nyken Robinson. Four on three up the left side, Jamal Boykin in the open floor. Goes in and Viney and scores.
This is the voice of the Golden Bears, Roxy Bernstein, inviting you to join us for another exciting season of Cal basketball right here on your home for the Bears.
Stanford will be at the Haas Pavilion Saturday, February 14th at 1:30. You can hear the game right here on KRXA 540.
Chicken cans.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Looking at the billboard.
Wet weekend on the left coast.
Also ran.
Bands of rain moving through, and here in California,
people,
we desperately need it.
Checking out the race.
So put out your rain catchers and catch what you can.
Doing what I'm doing.
In Bolinas, it'll pass for a shower.
Feeling out of place. Walking. Walking. In the rain.
Coming up next hour, Senator Bernie Sanders will be joining us. He's coming to San Francisco. He'll be speaking Tuesday night, the 17th of February, at the First Unitarian Universalist Church in conversation with a friend of this program, Norman Solomon. It starts at 7:30.
Sounding like a no-no.
And right after the top of the hour, California State Controller John Chung will join us, talk about the mess in Sacramento, why you won't be getting your tax refund, and the other payments that he can't make this month. And next hour, too, we'll give you an update on the court case in San Francisco where Obama is using the same tactics as Bush did.
Walking in the rain.
And it really sucks. That's Flash in the Pan, by the way.
Come in, all you jesters.
A couple of wacky dudes from Australia.
Enter all you fools.
Who are actually the producers who discovered AC/DC.
Sit down, no-no.
They were also the Easy Beats who did Friday on My Mind. You got that?
Bonjour, this is Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/...
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The suspected culprit in the crash of Flight 3407.
The crew discussed significant ice buildup.
Economic stimulus passes in the House.
I'm Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill, where the stimulus bill is finally getting wrapped up.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Jim Taylor. Flight 3407, what caused it to crash, killing 50 people?
Delta 1998, look off your right side about 5 miles for a dash 8. Should be 2300. Do you see anything there?
The National Transportation Safety Board already with some preliminary findings. Here's CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick.
Shortly after the plane descended to 11,000 feet, the crew indicated the weather was deteriorating.
The crew discussed significant ice buildup, ice on the windshield and leading edge of the wings.
And the plane's de-icing mechanism was already on. The crew then lowered its landing gear and activated the wing flaps, and then came
a series of severe pitch and roll excursions within seconds.
The NTSB's Steve Chelander says the crew tried to save the plane.
Shortly after that, the crew attempted to raise the gear and flaps just before the end of the recording.
But it was too late. Cammie McCormick, CBS News, Clarence, New York.
One person killed on the ground when the turboprop smashed into a house.
I didn't think I was going to get out of there. I mean, I thought this was it.
As Karen Walensky tells WBEN, for her husband Doug, it was the end. He was killed inside their home. Among the 49 killed on board, Beverly Eckert. When her husband died in the 9/11 attack, she became a high-profile activist for changing the way U.S. intelligence works. She was flying to her hometown to observe what would have been her husband's birthday. Carrie Lemack was a friend.
Beverly was a very strong woman and very much wanted to honor her late husband, Sean. It was clear that she loved him so much. Whenever she talked about him, she would light up.
I'm Steve Kathan in Clarence, New York.
And I'm just happy that it was fast and that she didn't suffer.
Jennifer Ventner came to church here to mourn her best friend, a victim of the Flight 3407 crash. Pastor Carl Eastlack says the community has come together but is struggling.
How come in the Hudson they live and this one they don't? And man, you just get all these swirling. So a lot of people today are wrestling with that.
He told the congregation, we're all in this together. Not on board Flight 3407, ticketed passenger Paul Twaragowski. He missed the flight out of Newark.
Instantly, I was kind of just shocked and just a strange, creepy feeling of, wow, this could have been me on the plane. That flight, those numbers, that was my flight. on the ticket with my name on it.
The first officer of 3407, Rebecca Lynn Shaw, her mother, Lynn Morris.
We don't understand.
And President Obama.
Tragic events such as these remind us of the fragility of life and the value of every single day.
In London tonight, all 71 people safely evacuated when a British Airways jet makes a hard landing, at least one injury. Now this.
This Valentine's Day, there are two things you don't want to break. Her heart and your budget. So go to Walgreens. With great prices on everything from boxed candy to fragrances and cards, Walgreens has more than enough love to go around. Everything to make your loved one's day. And with thousands of convenient locations, many open 24 hours, Walgreens is just around the corner. So there's one more thing you'll save. Time. In every way, Valentine's is sweeter than Walgreens.
How to remove cash from a can of paint. Step 1, go to the Home Depot. Step 2, get $5 off all 1-gallon cans and $20 off all 5-gallon buckets of beautiful Behr paint. Step 3, put color on your walls and all the cash you saved in your wallet.
The Home Depot has lowered the price on the paint supplies you need most. And now get $5 off all 1-gallon cans and $20 off all 5-gallon buckets of Behr paint. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid through 216, U.S. only. See store for details.
It passed in the House today. It is expected to pass in the Senate tonight. CBS's Bob Fuss with details of the economic stimulus package.
This huge rescue package, the biggest ever passed by any Congress, has tax cuts, help for the unemployed, and spending on everything from building highways and restoring wetlands to computerizing medical records. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
After all the debate, this legislation can be summed up in one word. Jobs.
Every House Republican voted against it. Their leader's John Boehner.
I hope this bill works. I really do. For the good of our country. But my concern is that the plan that's outlined will not do what we want it to do.
President Obama says it's the best chance to avoid economic catastrophe and plans to sign it Monday. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents a word from the weather.
I am the weather.
Oh, yeah, I've seen you on the news.
But you must fear me.
I'm afraid I don't. See, my Ford is ready for anything.
No car can withstand the wrath of weather.
Mine can.
What? What do you mean?
Yep. Ford and Lincoln Mercury dealers offer the Works Fuel Saver Package. And besides a Motorcraft synthetic blend oil and filter change and tire rotation, is a complete check of belts and hoses, fluid levels, tires, brakes.
Oh, yeah? How about a little rain? Or a lot?
Now, Ford and Lincoln Mercury dealers have a special low price on wiper blades.
Whoa. Kind of knocked the wind right out of me.
Oh, sorry.
The Works Fuel Saver Package is just $29.95 or less after $10 mail-in rebate. Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury parts and service. Come in, keep going. Taxes, diesel, and disposal fees extra. See your participating dealership for rebate details or visit genuineservice.com through 33109.
Today, the United States Army...
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders will talk with us later this hour. In a moment, California State Controller John Chung.
They're closing all the libraries. They're closing all the libraries. They're closing all the libraries. I'm locking hallowed doors. They're closing all the libraries. Doubling my parking fees. They're building prisons in old schoolyards. Boy, I used to love it there.
California is beyond on the brink. We are actually looking into the abyss of insolvency, and bankruptcy is not an option. We really aren't allowed to do that, and we also technically can't run a deficit. So with the radical Republican minority in Sacramento continuing to obstruct meaningful resolution to our budget problems, State Controller John Chung has a very tough job to do. As he put it in an op-ed piece the other day, he's got $100 worth of bills to pay, and only $60 in the account. John Chung, welcome back to our program today.
Good afternoon.
First of all, how are you doing? You had some health issues recently, and it seems like maybe they're related to the stress you feel in the job you're doing right now.
I had a mild heart attack in late December, but my doctor said I've made excellent progress. In essence, going back to, you know, the full-time responsibilities of my job, actually instead of getting 4 to 5 hours sleep, now getting 6 to 7.
Okay, good, good. Well, we want you to take care of yourself. That's very important. And, John, give us a sense here of when California started to go into the red. In this op-ed piece that you wrote, it was interesting to note that we've been out of balance for quite some time now.
That's correct. We've went net cash balance negative on July 13th, 2007. So in excess of a year and a half, we've had to borrow money to run the finances of the state of California.
And that borrowing has become more and more difficult and more expensive.
That's correct. With the credit lockdown, the liquidity crisis, last year the major solvency issues, it's been especially difficult for the state governments to borrow money. And as you know, last week the one of the credit rating agencies, Standard & Poor, downgraded California, and today we are the lowest credit rated state in the United States of America.
Mm-hmm. And so does that mean, I mean, we know there is a credit crunch out there, but is California completely unable to borrow because of our credit rating and the lack of a meaningful budget?
That's right. When Standard & Poor's downgraded us last week, they cited the fact that we have significant political disagreement and and we don't have sound budget solutions in place. If the governor and legislature come to agreement quickly, not only will we need sound budget solutions, but we also need sound cash solutions. I've had to defer some of the payments because, as you pointed out at the beginning of the program, I only have $6 in the month of February to pay $10 worth of bills.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want to return income tax refunds, if we want to pay vendors, if we want to pay the Social Security Administration for the aged, the blind, the disabled, we need those monies coming into the state treasury immediately.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about the difficult choices you're making and how you do it. And, you know, I'm fortunate right now. I've got enough money to pay my bills, but it wasn't so long ago that I would sit down at the beginning of the month and say, holy cow, you know, I've got more bills than I've got money. And you say, okay, who can I delay? Who can I sweet talk into forgiving the debt? And, you know, how can I cut my monthly budget so that next month I'm not in the same position? How do you prioritize the bills that you need to pay for the people of California?
Well, we're in the predicament that you mentioned in your description. I am paying the payments as required by law. The laws are set out in the California Constitution. They're set out in federal law, and they are set out by court order based on previous lawsuits. So under the California Constitution, the top priority that has to be made is payments for education. Violation of that is a violation of the California Constitution. The next priority payment is debt service, the money we borrow. Now, that is what I have to prevent, and as you introduced in the program, defaulting on debt obligations would create the, as financial analysts state, the nuclear meltdown of California's finances. Nobody would lend us money. There would be massive litigation. We'd be paying massive interest and penalties to a whole host of agencies that we owe money. For instance, if we did not pay private sector vendors, small private sector vendors, the moment we pay a payment late, we owe them 91.25% interest. Right? That would come out of hard-earned taxpayer dollars.
Say that again, 91% interest?
That's correct. That's correct. And that's why
I thought you couldn't do that unless you went to South Dakota or something.
Yeah, and it's, but it's in the California laws that paying a moment late to these small vendors would cost the taxpayers of California significant amounts of money.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so education first, debt service second, third is special funds. We have over 1,000 special funds here in California, 600 plus we can borrow from. So, for example, the oil spill prevention fee, we charge a fee so that if we have an oil spill off the coast of California,
mm-hmm.
and use the monies from those fees to clean up the coast. Well, if we have that type money available, and we could possibly default here in California.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, talk a little bit about payments to counties. There are 58 counties in California. Each one is in a different cash position. Some of them have sufficient medical care and welfare and payments to the aged and disabled for several months. Others can't even make it through February. Do you have any latitude to decide which county to transfer money to, or is it all or none?
I could technically make some type of payment. It's not in a protected category. Income tax refunds, local assistance payments to counties, payments to some of the private sector vendors, payments for Cal grants, none of those categories are protected under the law. However, and we're trying to figure out other ways to find funding so that we can get additional monies into the coffers to protect the counties. Mm-hmm. But if I provide money to some of the counties, some of the other counties may sue and say, why are you only providing money to some of the counties? Right, mm-hmm. And then you would have people who aren't getting tax refunds or students not getting the Cal grants, all saying, well, you're choosing to make some priority payment, some non-priority payments and not paying us.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand the difficult situations the counties are on. That's why my staff continues to try to work with financial institutions to see if they will provide us some money so that we can make some of these payments, especially to the counties and rural counties that are do not have the available cash flow for this month's local assistance category.
And if you know offhand, what are the three or four worst-off counties in the state?
Well, I received a call from Glenn County who said they were in trouble. Some of the newspaper reports mentioned that Trinity County stated that they may have to issue IOUs. Now, that's from newspaper reports. That's not from having spoken to them.
Uh-huh.
And I've spoken to some of the larger counties who say, John, we also have significant cash flow issues.
Mm-hmm. Wow, this is really getting critical. John Chung is with us, California State Controller. And, John, finally, on the spending side, many of us are concerned about income tax refunds. Now, we put the money in, and we get a refund back to the extent we don't owe taxes, and typically there's no interest involved in that. But will you wind up owing interest to taxpayers if refunds get delayed beyond a certain date?
That is correct. We obviously want to push out tax refunds as quickly as possible. One of the things that I've done since I've been in public service is actually to have my office provide free income tax assistance to vulnerable populations. So you can walk into my office in Sacramento or Los Angeles and get free tax assistance. But that being said, the statute provides that if we pay income tax refunds past May 30th, then the tax refunds will accrue interest close to about 5%.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what about these advances? For example, I think if you go to H&R Block and they do your taxes, they will actually give you, your refund factored for, an interest or carrying charge. Are they still offering that, or have they balked since they don't have a clear expectation of when they can get paid?
I don't know about a lot of the tax preparers, and if people decide to choose that route, they ought to be careful and do the complete financial analysis to make sure that it makes sense for them to engage in that type of program. We have been talking to some of the financial institutions to explore, will they help their clients that are private sector vendors or, those who need paychecks or those who are entitled to some other type of repayment by the state of California. We have a whole list of credit unions, and it's listed on my website, who have stepped up. They have pledged to commit a certain amount of money in assistance of their customers who are having some difficulty with the state of California during this difficult budget time.
Mm-hmm.
We've been trying to work with some of the commercial banks. They haven't stepped forth as strongly, and so we're going to continue to work with them to see if they can help their customers in this great time of need.
And your website, I'm guessing, is controller.ca.gov?
It's pretty close. It's www.sco.ca.gov.
SEO.ca.gov. Okay. And finally, John Chung, what about the revenue side? Just as an example, I am a small business owner. I pay on the estimated tax system. And over the course of the last year, I'm sorry to tell you that my dispatches of cash to Sacramento have declined sharply. And I imagine I'm not alone. Are you confident that you have accurate revenue projections as you try to juggle through this landmine, this minefield?
Well, the governor's office offers cash projections. We check to see if it was an acceptable range. They've budgeted, they've made significant revisions, so it reflects the fact that we have a very, very weak economy. We will continue to have them do those cash flow adjustments as we see a deteriorating economy. You can quickly check that by looking at what the unemployment figures are. For the last 2 years, California's unemployment rate has gone from 5.9% to 9.3%. We've obviously seen a rapid decrease in personal income taxes, which are about 51 to 53% of the state's tax revenues.
Mm-hmm.
Since they have less money in their pockets, they're buying less, so sales tax revenues are decreasing, and that impacts corporations, so corporate taxes are decreasing. So we will continue to make those adjustments. And the good thing about my website, when I became controller, I post those numbers on a monthly basis so that the governor, the legislature, and the entire public has the same financial information at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And, John, what about the prospects now that the stimulus bill has passed and the president is expected to sign it early next week? How soon will any of that money flow to California, and will it help you cover these gaps?
We have to look specifically to see what categories those fundings are going to pertain to. They were talking about monies for education, for health care. We have to see if they pertain to general funds, which we are weak in, or they pertain to special funds.
Mm-hmm.
The deterioration that has hit California has been very strong in terms of the general fund losses, and any backfill from Washington, D.C. would help us for the short term.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you've got your hands full there. Thank you for taking time to brief us today, John Chung. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Be well.
Okay, you too. That is California State Controller. He'd like to write $100 worth of checks, but there's only $60 in the account. We'll take a break and return. You can comment if you like in the next segment. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, The Peter B. Collins Show, here in Broke, California.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Come here, Max. What's wrong? What? Oh, I get it. A rough day?
Hi, I'm Dr. Annetta Richmond inviting you to Natural Veterinary Therapy in Pacific Grove, the peninsula's new holistic veterinary medicine clinic featuring a wide variety of natural treatments and remedies for common ailments. We also specialize in acupuncture, chiropractic, and physical rehabilitation using an underwater treadmill. Natural Veterinary Therapy, Lighthouse Avenue between 14th and 15th in Pacific Grove. Our environment is unique. Clients comment on how calm and caring it is for their pets and themselves. At Natural Veterinary Therapy, our goal is to help your pet heal from within. So think for yourself and think for your pets. Visit our website at naturalveterinarytherapy.com or call 655-0501. That's 655-0501.
Meow. Whiskers, I'd better call Dr. Richmond for you, too.
Meow, meow. I'm Glenn Sadowski from Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey. Did you know that over one-third of all Americans have tried alternative medicine for relief from chronic pain, depression, asthma, and many other disorders, that acupuncture is safe and effective and has been in use for thousands of years, or that traditional Chinese medicine treats not only your symptoms but the actual root causes of disease. At Optimal Health, we offer acupuncture, lymphatic, deep tissue, and hot stone massage, have a full Chinese herbal pharmacy, and for acupuncture, we accept insurance. Reclaim yourself at Optimal Health at 655-3208, where clients take a proactive role in their well-being, make informed decisions, and create healthier lifestyles. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture today at 655-3208 or on the web at OptimalHealthMonterey.com. Optimal Health, where you'll receive good medicine with great results. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now in Santa Cruz on Valencia Road at Headington Drive, we have a collision with no injuries. And taking a look at the Hollister Goer area, we've got a two-vehicle traffic collision on Highway 152 just west of Highway 156. In weather, it's partly cloudy with some light rain throughout the Tri-County area. We've got highs in the low 50s to upper 40s, and we're expecting more rain tonight with a slight chance of thunderstorms. Saturday will be mostly cloudy with some scattered showers and highs in the mid-50s. Here are some temperatures. Right now in Monterey and Salinas, it's 50 degrees, and in Santa Cruz, it's 46 degrees. That's your AM 540 traffic and weather. Have a fabulous Friday. The Peter B. Collins Show will be right back.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Well, that was a sobering report from the controller of the state of California, John Chung. He spells his name C-H-I-A-N-G and pronounces it Chung. And you just heard the situation we're in, and we don't have a resolution even today. And as you'll hear in a few moments when I talk with Senator Bernie Sanders, what we're seeing here in California is more intense, more extreme than what's going on in Washington, but they're quite similar. Republicans are taking us over the brink, off the edge, and into the unknown. Their desire to pander to people who don't want to pay taxes and to shred government beyond any reasonable level, it's coming into very sharp focus. And if you listen to me, maybe you've gotten tired of me railing and ranting about this since last summer. But the Republican minority in Sacramento, like the Republican minority in Washington, they're willing to play all kinds of games with our future for short-term political gain. At least that's what they're hoping for. They want Obama to fail. Limbaugh said it. The rest are not as crude, rude, and unrestrained. They want Obama to fail, and they don't care what happens to our country. They don't care what happens to the most vulnerable among us. And as you heard, there are counties that cannot pay their bills this month because John Chung doesn't have the money to send them. So it's very real, and it's getting worse by the moment. And the Republicans continue to sit on their hands. And in Sacramento, we still don't have word that there's a final deal. And as you heard from Lieutenant Governor Garamendi the other day, it appears the Republicans have agreed to the framework of a budget with significant tax increases on the car tax, the income tax, the sales tax, and the gasoline tax. But it seems that the only thing they'll do is authorize that those measures go on the ballot in a special election, probably in June. That is a dereliction of their duties. And they should be thrown out on each of their ears. And this prospect of a special election means that no money can flow in this fiscal year that ends June 30th. And it only digs us deeper and deeper in that Republican hole. Schwarzenegger, worthless on these issues. And I wish I could end this with something happy. I'm Peter B. Collins. Bernie Sanders coming up next here on the program.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Another one bites the dust. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Now Republican Senator Judd Gregg has decided he can't be Commerce Secretary either. What's really crazy is that his taxes are actually in order.
There was absolutely nothing that had to do with any of the other issues that other people may have had or any other issues relative to this decision.
So, was he upset about the stimulus package?
Well, the stimulus package is sort of a catalyst, but it's really not at the essence of the problem. The issue is philosophy.
Philosophy? Huh. Apparently what happened is that Judd Gregg discovered something about himself that he didn't know before.
I have a very core set of political and philosophical beliefs that I don't think I've ever adjusted significantly other than, you know, I mean, clearly I've adjusted them. But I mean, the fact is I believe in a certain set of values.
Face it, man.
I've always led my own team, so to say. I've always been myself.
Whether I'm right.
There was no light bulb moment.
Or whether I'm wrong.
Face it.
I struggled with this.
Whether I find a place in this world or never belong.
You are a Republican.
I've been challenged to be myself.
I gotta be me.
You're a Republican. Face it. It's okay. Be out and proud. There's no shame.
But it would be virtually impossible for me to do this job because for me to be myself.
I gotta be me.
Look, a lot of people turn out to be Republicans. Just be happy you didn't turn out to be bipartisan. Now this.
How to remove cash from a can of paint. Step one, go to the Home Depot. Step two, get $5 off all 1 gallon cans and $20 off all 5 gallon buckets of beautiful Behr paint. Step 3, put color on your walls and all the cash you saved in your wallet.
The Home Depot has lowered the price on the paint supplies you need most. And now get $5 off all 1 gallon cans and $20 off all 5 gallon buckets of Behr paint. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid through 216, U.S. only. See store for details.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio.
Hello, KRXA listeners. This is Sylvia Waldrop Quarles, president of the Monterey County Branch NAACP. We're excited to announce our annual Life Membership Awards Dinner being held on Saturday, February 21st from 6 to 10 at the lovely Embassy Suites. KRXA's own Hal Ginsberg will be receiving the NAACP's Spirit of Partnership Award. Come to the dinner to show your support on February 21st. For tickets, call us at 394-3727. Tickets are $75 each. Again, call us at 394-3727. Yes, that's 394-3727.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yeah, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there. And who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. Straight away, we'll talk with Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont. He'll be in San Francisco on Tuesday. And we'll follow that with a report on the second strike against the Obama Justice Department. They did it again, embracing the Bush position on state secrets in a San Francisco courtroom. Now, Vermont's independent Senator Bernie Sanders. He'll be in San Francisco Tuesday, February 17th, for a conversation with our good friend, progressive Democrat Norman Solomon. Starts at 7:30 at the First Unitarian Universalist Church, and that's at Franklin at Geary in San Francisco. Senator, we welcome you in advance, and please bring large amounts of money. California is broke.
Okay. Well, so is Vermont, and so is most of the country, and that's kind of what we're trying to address right now in the stimulus package.
Well, if I may, I want to put it in a little sharper relief, because we are really feeling the brunt of the Grover Norquist drown government in the bathtub concept. We have a small group of radical Republicans in Sacramento using minority rule tactics to block tax increases that are desperately needed here to keep California on an even keel. And to use the bus metaphor, we've got two wheels firmly over the cliff, spinning in thin air, and the Republicans are still quibbling about how to balance the books here in California. And they really seem intent on allowing the state to get into very dire financial straits to try to prove some of their philosophical points. And I wanted to bring that to your attention because I think that you're seeing some of the same things in a slightly different presentation in Washington.
I think, Peter, you're right. You know, it is amazing to me that after 8 years of the disastrous administration of George W. Bush, which has taken us in the wrong direction in almost every single area, where we have seen the middle class significantly decline, where we've seen poverty increase, where we've seen millions of people lose their health insurance, lose their pensions, that these guys, not content with a disastrous 8 years, mm-hmm. want to continue that right-wing ideology forward, which has hurt so many people. What I'm happy to say is that I think this economic recovery program, the stimulus package, is a beginning, mm-hmm. underlined a beginning, not only in attempting to address the immediate economic crisis where we're hemorrhaging hundreds of thousands of jobs every single month, but also a new beginning in moving this country forward with new national priorities. Everybody in this country, or virtually everybody, understands that our infrastructure is collapsing, our roads, bridges, wastewater plants, water systems, culverts. Everybody knows that. The Bush administration did virtually nothing to address that crisis. We now have the opportunity to put substantial numbers of people to work, rebuilding our infrastructure, which creates a national wealth, which will help us, obviously, into the future. Everybody for 30 years has been talking about the absurdity of this country continuing to be dependent on foreign oil. Last year, I believe we spent something like $700 billion importing oil from abroad. Everybody, or most people, understand, shouldn't say everybody, that global warming is a serious problem. But you know what? We are beginning, underlying beginning, mm-hmm. The process of investing in energy efficiency, beginning the process in investing in sustainable energy, weatherization, and breaking our dependence on fossil fuels. So we are making some progress. Everybody knows, or should know, that in this very deep recession, millions and millions of our fellow Americans. They are losing their jobs, their homes, their savings, their ability to send their kids to college. This stimulus package pours billions and billions of dollars into helping those families who have been negatively impacted by this recession, whether it is expanding the Pell Grant program so that kids will be able to stay in college, whether it is programs for emergency homeless shelters, expansion of the food stamp program. We are beginning to do that as well. Is this program perfect? No, it's not. But I think it does speak to moving America in a new direction with new priorities, paying attention to low and moderate income families rather than just the wealthy and the powerful whose needs have been attended to for so many years here in Washington.
And like the Republicans in California, your Republican colleagues seem willing to set the stage for a failure so that they can point a finger down the road and say, oh, well, if we just put more tax cuts in there, it would have helped the economy recover.
No, that's exactly right.
So let me turn that question around, and that is, how will we know if this actually works? I don't expect overnight results, but 2 years from now, what benchmarks should we use to say, well, you know, we preserved X number of jobs and we helped get us moving toward the green economy, toward a revision in our health care distribution?
Well, I think people are going to have to open their eyes and take a good look at what's happening. And let me tell you something, it's a lot easier to talk about these things than to make it happen. And I hope very much that the governors and the mayors and the local town officials are prepared to work overtime to make sure that this program succeeds. The truth is, when our critics say that we're pouring a lot of money into rebuilding America and they're concerned about how quickly we can move, that's a legitimate concern. I think we can do it. I think we can do it. But I think when you look out 6 months from now and a year from now and you see new roads being constructed, new water systems being constructed, when you see community health centers being established in your area and people having access to health care, when you see wind turbines providing sustainable energy and more photovoltaic units on rooftops, when you see solar thermal plants being built, when you see lower-income people who are hurting at least having their most basic needs taken care of, when you see those things and you see people regaining confidence in our economy, then I think you can say that we're having some success. I think what the president says, quite rightly, is nobody believes that we're going to turn the economy around tomorrow. It is going to take time. Nobody believes that this particular program is a panacea. Last month, we lost close to 600,000 jobs in 1 month. What President Obama is talking about is creating, over a period of a couple of years, 3.5 billion jobs. Well, you know what? We're just, you know, we're keeping our heads above water here. That's what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. So we've got to go forward in a number of different areas. This is not a panacea, but this is a significant investment in the middle class and working families, trying to keep us, frankly, from falling into a depression, trying to create jobs, trying to address the enormous number of unmet needs that this country now has after 8 years of disastrous Bush administration rule.
And private capital remains on the sidelines, and that's a critical issue that this stimulus package is hoping to shift, to really create some demand and help get the private money back into the markets. Senator Bernie Sanders with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Senator, here in San Francisco, there were two court sessions this week where the Obama administration, bizarrely, embraced the expansive state secret assertions that were used by the Bush administration to block court cases, block investigations, and they're doing it again. And I am shocked that the Obama team, now led by Eric Holder at the Justice Department, is maintaining the same posture on the state secret privilege. What can we do about this?
Well, I think what you're going to see on the part of some of us in many areas is to take a hard look at the role that the Bush administration played in so many areas. I mean, from torture to spying on Americans on down, and start undoing the damage that they have done. I'm not, to be honest with you, I've been consumed for the last week with the stimulus package, mm-hmm. And I'm not all that aware of what you're talking about. But clearly, I think you're going to see some of us taking a very hard look at the Bush record and trying to undo the damage that they have done
Well, please take a look at that maybe on your flight to San Francisco when you have some reading time. And also, I really want to hear Sibel Edmonds. I want that gag order that Ashcroft and Gonzalez put on her lifted because we deserve to know what she has to say. And finally, Senator Sanders, I'm very concerned about mission creep in Afghanistan. The New York Times this week reporting that we're going to send troops there even before the complete review is finished and we have a clear path and plan going forward. What are your views on this?
Well, my view is I share that concern. Afghanistan is a very, very complicated issue. I do not think the solution by any means is going to be simply more troops. I think we have to be clear about what our objectives are, and among other things, our objectives have to deal with Pakistan as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, well, bottom line is, I don't think that a military presence is going to be the sole mechanism by which we accomplish our goals. And we have to be very clear about what our goals are. I think the last thing that many of us want to see is another 30,000 troops get bogged down in a very, very nasty war.
Senator, I certainly agree with you there, and I thank you for your time today. We will see you Tuesday evening. That's February 17th in San Francisco. Franklin and Geary, the First Unitarian Universalist Church. Bernie Sanders in conversation with Norman Solomon. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Senator Bernie Sanders, we talked with him earlier today. Pardon me. And if you have any comments, reactions, you're welcome to call the program between now and the top of the hour. And as we mentioned, Bernie Sanders in conversation with Norman Solomon, Tuesday night, coming up February 17th, 7:30 p.m. in San Francisco at the First Unitarian Universalist Church. I'm going to be there and looking forward to hearing the exchange between Solomon and Sanders. I'd like to hear your comments, particularly on the issue related to the way Republicans have been playing all of these matters. They've blown right past their own responsibility for the economic mess that we're in. They have deep amnesia about the blank checks that they wrote to George W. Bush time and time again for tax cuts and a war. And now they continue to posture, pontificate, and John Boehner, who some people call Boehner, which we believe is the accurate German pronunciation, he threw a little tantrum on the floor of the House today before all Republicans once again voted against this package. And he took a cue from Keith Olbermann, picked up the bill, and threw it at the camera. Now, you won't be able to see that, so I'll describe it for you.
Gentleman from Ohio is recognized for 1 minute.
So he picks up this 1,000-page report. It's about a foot thick. He carries it down to the dais there.
Mr. Speaker, my colleagues.
Approaches the microphone.
The American economy needs help. Our neighbors, our friends, our constituents, they're hurting. And there's not a member in this body on either side of the aisle that doesn't understand that. And I think everyone in this chamber on both sides of the aisle understands that Congress needs to act, and we need to act now to help American families and help small businesses and to help bring more confidence back to our economy. The question is, how do you do that? The President, when he outlined his desires for this bill, summed it up pretty simply when he said, this bill needs to be about jobs. I don't think there's anybody in this chamber that disagrees that this bill needs to be about jobs, preserving jobs in America and helping to create new jobs and helping to get our economy rolling again.
And Republican policies don't create jobs.
But a bill that was supposed to be about jobs, jobs, jobs has turned into a bill that's all about spending, spending, and spending.
That's how you create jobs, Johnny.
This is disappointing. The American people expect more of us. They expect to have something that's going to work for them. And my opposition to this bill isn't the fact that we're doing a bill. We need to act. But how? When you look at some of the spending in this bill, it will do nothing about creating jobs in America.
Yeah, all those tax cuts you larded it up with, including the alternative minimum tax, $70 billion.
In San Francisco is going to help a struggling auto worker in Ohio.
Oh, so we pull out the Limbaugh talking points.
Tell me how spending the Hannity distortions in this bill to have a high-speed rail line between Los Angeles and Las Vegas.
No, it's San Francisco,
dude. It's going to help the construction worker in my district.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Or how about the family who called me about the fact that they're the breadwinner in the family's hours are going to be cut from 40 hours to 20 hours. Can't hardly make his payment.
It's your fault, Johnny.
What's it do for him?
Face up to
absolutely
it.
Nothing. And so my concern about this is
come
that
on,
we
throw
have
the papers.
To have
I want to get to that.
We're twice as many jobs.
He's still talking. I'm fast-forwarding here through trying to find
we're
the point.
We're not included at the beginning of the problem.
Where he
jobs.
Actually gets dramatic.
They don't want more spending on the pages.
Okay, so now he's
1,100 pages, not one member of this body has read. Not one.
Now, this may be the only valid point he's making. It is sad that the Democrats said they'd give 48 hours with a bill posted online before calling a vote. And it's true that this 1,100-page bill was not posted on the Internet as of Thursday evening. That's a fair criticism.
There may be some staffer over at the Appropriations Committee that read all of this last night. I don't know how you could read 1,100 pages between midnight and now. Not one member's read this. What happened to the promise that we're going to let the American people see what's in this bill for 48 hours? But nope, we don't have time to do that. We owe it to the American people to get this bill right.
There was his dramatic moment. He took the big pile of papers and dropped them on the floor. Go back to the bar, Johnny. I'd say Johnny Walker Black. A double. Spare the rocks. We'll take a break and return to your phone calls next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540. Progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia Karim with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather. Right now, we've got a traffic hazard on County Road G16 at Carmel Middle School. And in Santa Cruz, we have a traffic hazard on Highway 1 just south of Highway 17. Making our way to Hollister Gilroy, we have a report of a vehicle on fire on the southbound 101 just south of Highway 129. Also in the Hollister Gilroy area on Highway 152 at San Felipe Road, we've got a traffic collision with no injuries. Taking a look at weather, it's partly cloudy out right now with some scattered showers, and we've got highs in the low 50s to upper 40s. Tonight, showers are likely with a slight chance of thunderstorms, and lows will be dropping into the lower 40s. Saturday will be mostly cloudy, with some scattered showers and highs in the mid-50s. That's your AM 540 traffic and weather. Have a great afternoon, everyone. Peter B. will be right back.
Peninsula Gem and Jewelry in Monterey is like no other store on the peninsula. 30 years family-owned and operated, Peninsula Gem specializes in finished jewelry, jewelry repair, and custom design. Supplying tools and materials for the jeweler and lapidarist from precious metals to cutting materials. Check out the spectacular Monterey Jade and other collectible minerals. Great gift ideas, too. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry is at 2245 North Fremont Street, right next to Big Five in Monterey. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry. Sun Street Centers has an outpatient recovery program designed for men and women with alcohol or drug issues, referred by the court system, employer-referred, or self-referred. Sun Street also takes insurance. At Sun Street, you're provided with one-on-one and group sessions that focus on relapse prevention, parenting skills, anger management, and family issues, and introduces the 12-step program. You can choose either 2 or 3 days a week or evenings with sites in Salinas and Marina. Just go to sunstreetcenters.org to sign up. sunstreetcenters.org.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Brandon Hirsch. Our top item today, Fox News presented a press release issued by the Senate Republican Communications Center as its own research. John Scott, co-host of Fox's Happening Now, in purporting to take a look back at how the economic recovery package was born and how it grew, cited sources and cost figures that originated from the February 10th SRCC press release. Adding insult to injury, one on-screen graphic during the segment even repeated a typo from the original press release. At no time did Scott indicate that he was reading from a partisan press release. And today's most outrageous comment comes from Fox News' own Sean Hannity, who, in a segment with Greta Van Susteren, falsely identified a Frisbee golf course as an earmark in the economic recovery bill.
This is not what is going to bring us economic security. I got five pages.
Give me some examples.
A Frisbee park?
In fact, there is no earmark for a Frisbee golf course in either the House or the Senate version of the bill. For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Obama 0 for 2 on state secrets. I'm not going to back down.
No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
It is downright odious, obscene, that the Obama administration seeks continuity with Bush on the power grabs and the suppression of our rights, including the right to litigate, the right to sue in court, abuses by our government. And as you've heard earlier in the week before the Ninth Circuit, administration lawyers claiming that it's been fully vetted by the new Attorney General maintain the same ugly position that Bush did on state secrets related to rendition and torture. And on Thursday, they did it again. This relates to the only case where we have a shred of hope of revealing the extent of the illegal wiretapping that occurred. Jim Bamford has pretty well shown us from public documents that they've got everything, every phone call, every email. Do they read it? Do they listen? We don't know. But they capture them. They record them. And we had hoped to talk to Attorney John Eisenberg, but he is in the middle of receiving briefs from Judge Vaughn Walker this afternoon, and hopes to join us early next week to talk about this. But I hope people will make a really loud, loud stink, because this is unnecessary, it's unconstitutional, and it ain't change. It's more of the same old, and I better stop there, it's a $350,000 fine. Hal in Coos Bay, you're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter. Long time no talk to you.
Glad you called in.
Since you weren't able to stay on the air up here, it's been kind of hit and miss that I catch you on the internet.
Yeah, I'm disappointed by that too. It was I was sorry to miss the to have a change there in Coos Bay, and maybe we'll get it back. Call the station, let Mike O'Brien know. Okay.
You know, I did call the station right after that, and they were disappointed too. It had to do something outside of their control, but because the lady that I talked to just she says, "Oh man, I am so disappointed with this." But anyway, I kind of wanted to speak up for Senator DeFazio, our main guy up here.
Yeah, he's just a congressman, but Peter DeFazio is a good guy.
Yeah, and he voted against it, and I have been trying to follow this stuff. And did you hear the other day where Peter DeFazio and his staff discovered a loophole in the TARP?
Yes, I did.
They can get back to $18 billion from those guys if they do it correctly.
That's
that'd
right.
Be a,
mm-hmm.
That'd be a good start.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I overheard yesterday, I think it was, is that one of the things that those three senators that they begrudgingly brought in, I wish they would have just gone to the filibuster thing like everybody was telling them to do, but one of the things that they cut out was the whistleblower aspect of it, that if they put this whole thing together, you can't, what is it? Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I am. And here's the problem. We don't know what's in that bill. And I, as I said, the one accurate point that Boehner made is that it's unfair for any member to have to vote on an 1,100-page bill that they haven't read. And
well,
so
we don't
know if Feinstein snuck in that element that will neutralize net neutrality. There are a lot of unknowns here, and it does permit people like Sean Hannity to just make things up and say, oh, it's to protect some mouse in San Francisco. So
one more point.
We will have to wait and see what's in it. Yeah, go ahead, Hal.
I remember back in the 90s when Clinton was the president, and he pushed GATT and NAFTA through.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was NAFTA first, wasn't it?
Yes.
And DeFazio came back to Oregon, PO'd, I won't say the words, but very PO'd, and was saying the exact same thing. He said, They shoved this through. He said it had to be done, and they didn't even give us a chance to either vote on it or even read it.
Right, yeah. And that is not fair to anybody, including the American public. Thank you, Hal. Now to Brett in Eureka, listening on KGOE. Hi, Brett.
Absolutely, yeah, and we're very lucky to get you on KGOE up here in Eureka. We're proud of them.
Thanks.
And the things they do for us. No, I was pretty much convinced that the reason that I've told you in the past, that we keep these Republicans around, you know, for Obama's purposes, is to make sure they don't burn the files. Maybe we can get somebody in there to watch them, and, you know, keep them around for a month and then get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought that was the plan, but it doesn't look like that. He's conforming too much.
Well,
I was really bipartisan.
I was very glad to see Judd Gregg pull out.
Well, that's pretty funny here. I think
that's the interruptus we can all be happy about.
Well, yeah, I just think they had him in there because I think maybe they thought he'd lead them to where some of that earlier stimulus money went to, you know, and or where George left Hitler's gold.
I can't figure it out, Brett, because it turns out we just learned yesterday that Judd Gregg volunteered. He nominated himself. He called the White House and said, well, Bill Richardson's out. I'll be your Commerce Secretary. I think that's bizarre. What's even more bizarre is Obama said, oh, that's a great idea, Judd.
Hey,
I'll do it.
Space exploration.
Huh?
What's our budget for space exploration? My wife wants to know, how many pages were in the Patriot Act that they pushed through at midnight?
It was about 1,400.
And how many people got to read that?
All right, Brett, thank you very much. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll talk election issues next with Brad Friedman.
Has your computer been slowing down? Are you having problems with your email? Or when you go to the Internet, is your browser taking so long to load that it seems like the worldwide wait? I'm Luke Ford, CEO of My Computer Works. We help people just like you with computer problems you can't fix. With one easy call, we can help you get your computer working the way you want it, speeding it back up, making sure you can send and receive emails, and making the Internet fun again. You'll speak to a U.S.-based technician who knows what they're doing, who can usually fix your computer on the very first call. If your computer's been slowing down, you can't get your email to work, your Internet's taking forever, or if you're not sure what's wrong, but your computer's just not working the way you want it, call My Computer Works, and we'll help you fast.
Call My Computer Works right now, toll-free, 888-629-9618. Tell them Peter B. sent you, 888-629-9618. One more time, 888-629-9618.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Tom Foley. Ice appears to be a major factor in last night's commuter plane crash near Buffalo. 49 people who were on Continental Connection Flight 3407 from Newark, New Jersey, were killed, as was one man on the ground. CBS News correspondent Cammy McCormick has the latest word from investigators.
After the plane descended, the cockpit recordings indicated the crew grew worried about the worsening weather conditions.
They saw icing on the windshield and the leading edge of the wings, and right after that, significant pitch and roll. Severe pitch and roll is the words that were used.
Especially concerning because they noted the plane's de-icing mechanism was already on. The NTSB's Steve Chelander.
All we know is that it was selected on. It's not going to tell you whether it was functioning or not.
And that may be a crucial piece of this puzzle. Cammy McCormick, CBS News, Clarence, New York.
There were a couple of other aviation incidents, too. A crash landing in London, but only one minor injury as a British Airways passenger jet had landing gear trouble. And fuel transfer problems sent an Air Pacific 747 back to LAX about an hour out into the Pacific. The Senate is voting slowly on the $787 billion stimulus program President Obama has been pushing as crucial to the nation's economic recovery. The House voted earlier with GOP leader John Boehner definitely in opposition.
I hope this bill works. I really do, for the good of our country. But my concern is that the plan that's outlined will not do what we want it to do.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi presided over a vote that was along party lines.
On this vote, the yeas are 246, the nays are 183. The conference and one voting present, the conference report is adopted.
There were seven Democrats among those no votes, no Republicans among those voting yes. 60 votes are needed to pass the stimulus package in the Senate. The Democrats have 59 of them and are waiting for Ohio's Sherrod Brown to return from his mother's wake to cast that 60th yes vote.
I'm Peter Mayer at the White House. The final deal on the economic package is a landmark moment for the president, who pushed for it even before he took office. The size and shape of the plan have changed, reflecting what Mr. Obama has described as a hard-fought compromise. There will be more give and take in the months ahead on efforts to resolve the financial crisis and challenges facing many homeowners.
The new Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, will be going to Asia next week, and before that she spells out an offer to North Korea, a peace treaty, normal ties, and aid if it eliminates its nuclear arms program. Wall Street investors so far apparently unimpressed with the signals from Washington. The Dow Jones Industrials are at their lowest point since the crisis days of November, down 82 points, or about 1%. Standard & Poor's 500 also down about 1%. The Nasdaq down about 0.5%. World stocks were mixed. U.S. markets will be closed on Monday for President's Day. This is CBS News.
Hey guys, don't start the new year in the doghouse. Now's the time to make things right. Head to the jewelry store inside JCPenney before Valentine's Day. You'll find great deals on diamonds. 1/3 carat total weight diamond heart in yellow gold, $114.99. The 1 carat total weight diamond heart pendant, 14 carat gold over silver, $229.99. Plus a lab-created ruby heart pendant, $116.99. Deals like these make it easy to get out of trouble. JCPenney.
Experience it and win with Tempur-Pedic. If you've been waiting for the absolute best time to try a life-changing Tempur-Pedic Swedish sleep system, this is it. Visit a participating retail store today and get your game piece for a chance to win $10,000 just for trying a Tempur-Pedic mattress. Simply call, click, or visit a participating retailer near you today to find out how. Call 1-800-433-2720 or visit Tempur-Pedic.com/experience. That's 1-800-433-2720 or Tempur-Pedic.com/experience. For official rules, go to www.experienceitandwin.com. Contest ends 3809. Offer void where prohibited.
You know what today is, right? Yeah, Friday the 13th, but there's more to it, and whose fault is that?
Blame Someone Else Day falls on the first Friday the 13th of each year. Michigan's Ann Vero got the idea on a Friday the 13th in 1982. Her alarm clock failed, triggering a full day of mishaps. But Vero opted to pass the buck, and she's been blaming others ever since.
The post office, or your mother-in-law, the weather, your car for not starting, dinner.
Today, she's getting her car fixed. So who's she pinning that on?
Probably whoever put it together.
As for all the attention over the day of finger-pointing, Vero has no one to blame but herself. Scott Ryan, CBS News, Detroit.
You recall the name Blackwater. That's the contractor that provided security for U.S. diplomats and others in Iraq and was involved in a shooting there that left at least a dozen civilians dead. It's changing its name. The company will now be known as Z, spelled X-E. I'm Tom Foti, CBS News.
This Valentine's Day, there are two things you don't want to break. Her heart and your budget. So go to Walgreens. With great prices on everything from boxed candy to fragrances and cards, Walgreens has more than enough love to go around. Everything to make your loved one's day. And with thousands of convenient locations, many open 24 hours, Walgreens is just around the corner. So there's one more thing you'll save. Time. In every way, Valentine's is sweeter at Walgreens.
How to remove cash from a can of paint. Step 1, go to the Home Depot. Step 2, get $5 off all 1-gallon cans and $20 off all 5-gallon buckets of beautiful Behr paint. Step 3, put color on your walls and all the cash you saved in your wallet.
The Home Depot has lowered the price on the paint supplies you need most. And now get $5 off all 1-gallon cans and $20 off all 5-gallon buckets of Behr paint. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid through 216, U.S. only. See store for details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Every week about this time, we talk about election integrity, election issues. Brad Friedman joins me next. And a tip of the nightcap to our late night listeners in San Francisco and Portland. Great to have you with us. And later this hour, we have a special guest who will be joining us, Ion Sancho, who is the elections chief in Leon County, Florida, and one of the real leaders inside that industry in fighting for accurate vote counting, transparency, and accountability to the public. He is quite a fellow, and Brad and I will be talking with him a little bit later. Brad, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I would add only one word, by the way, to Ion's description. I would call him the legendary election supervisor from Leon County, Florida. Remember, he was put in charge in 2000 by the Florida Supreme Court of the full state recount that never happened.
Yep.
So that's how well respected he is. He's a terrific guy and one of the good guys in the election integrity fight. And there's not enough election officials who are outspoken about these things. But Ion is certainly one of them, so I'm delighted he'll be joining us.
Yeah, that's going to be great. And also, I know you're working to get Minnesota's Secretary of State, who runs the elections there, Mark Ritchie, on our program. And whenever that'll happen, I think that'll be great, because he's sitting on quite a story there. And the Al Franken Norm Coleman saga continues.
Yes, it does. We've got late more breaking news, actually. Late this afternoon out of Minnesota, out of the three-judge panel in, where are we here? Minnesota.
Yeah.
That's looking at this contest. They have now excluded a rather, quote, huge number, according to the Franken attorneys, of rejected absentee ballots that had been in the ballot universe, they call it, those ballots still in consideration for counting. There had been about 4,800 ballots that Norm Coleman wanted counted that had been previously rejected. Some of them, by the way, he had rejected himself during the hand count phase, and about 800 from that Al Franken would like counted. So the judges today gave their ruling on some 19 different categories of rejected absentee ballots, ballots that had been rejected for all sorts of different reasons, and essentially knocked out a huge swath, saying that only ballots that were legally, now this is something that's going to be quite amazing when you hear it, but only ballots that were legally cast under relevant law shall be considered for counting. Now, to you and me, that probably makes perfect sense. Yeah. We should not count ballots that were cast illegally, for example, where the voter didn't sign the ballot or where the signature didn't match. But incredibly, Norm Coleman's attorneys have been arguing now for the past 3 weeks that those ballots should, in fact, be counted, that they have made the case, although this case, too, has been rejected, I think, by the court, that in some counties, some of those ballots were allowed in for counting. Therefore, if they were improperly allowed for counting in some counties, they're trying to make the case that they should be improperly allowed for the counting in all counties. That's their equal protection argument that I suspect they will go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court with. Nonetheless, it's certainly a blow to the Coleman campaign here. There was some 4,800 ballots previously that they had wanted for consideration for counting. Not yet sure how many ballots this is going to knock out. I'm just reading some coverage here from Coleman's campaign is saying he'll leave about 3,900 ballots still in consideration. They may be being optimistic there. Franken's campaign, I was just listening in on a conference call with their lead attorney, Mark Elias. He is delighted by the news and thinks this is going to knock out thousands of ballots for consideration. Either way, it's surely going to make this much, much more difficult for Norm Coleman to be able to overtake that. Well, it had been 225 vote lead that Franken had. Now it's about 250 because earlier this week as well, just a couple of days ago, the court gave 24 new votes to Al Franken. And there was a sort of a separate case that had been joined with this one. 61 different voters, Franken voters, had sued to have their ballots counted. And 24 of them the court has now allowed should be counted. The rest of those ballots will be still further considered. So Coleman, Franken's lead is officially 225. He has declined to add those 24 new voters until all of the all of these matters are decided finally. Mm-hmm. But it would put his total at just under 250 vote lead over Norm Coleman's over Norm Coleman with 2.9 million cast in that race.
Now, Brad, we had a fascinating conversation last week with Noah Kunin. VTHEuptake.org. And one of the things that he pointed out was that they were crawling through this process. They were able to evaluate, you know, fewer than 10 ballots each day.
Yeah.
And even if we accept the so-called universe that Coleman wants to believe is out there of 4,800 or somewhere in that zone, we could be counting ballots when this Senate term expires in 6 years.
Well, it probably won't be that long. However, there is has been quite a bit of talk up there in St. Paul about the snow and ice being gone and the lawnmowers being out before they finally get a winner here. Yeah, it could happen that way. Now, I've been holding out some hope that the three-judge panel will do precisely what they did today and begin to cull down the pool of ballots in that universe.
Mm-hmm.
They may have just knocked out at least 1,000, perhaps 1,500, perhaps even more. But you're right. After that, we could come down to a case-by-case consideration. But I doubt that's going to be the case. The sense that I get here is that as they're able to categorize these ballots into various reasons for why they were excluded in the first place, they'll be able to make a determination overall, okay, we're going to count all ballots that had, you know, that were properly signed, were properly submitted, but might have been missing a registration form, and we can go ahead and open those ballots to see if the registration form was inside.
Mm-hmm.
If it is, we count it. If it isn't, we don't. So I don't think they're going to allow 3,000 or 4,000 witnesses, each and every voter who had their ballot excluded, but it could happen. And, in fact, Noah Kunin, who we had on last week, was one of those folks who had his own ballot rejected. He had just learned last
mm-hmm.
week, and it looks like the ruling today will be such that his ballot will not be counted. At least that's what he said about an hour or so ago.
Okay, and he has not had to be sworn in to comment to this panel on his ballot?
Not yet, although I did hear in passing today, I've been trying to keep up with this, and I would urge folks to check out theuptake.org because they have been running the live coverage of the trial as it happens and the press conferences and so forth. And over the weekend, they tend to rerun a lot of what has happened throughout the week. I did hear in passing while I was working on something else and had it running, I heard one of, I think it was Coleman's attorneys, mentioned his name, Noah Kunin's name, to one of the election officials who was in there. So they did, I think, go through his ballot. But he has yet to be called specifically to testify.
Okay. Anything else that developed in the past week there in this Minnesota contest?
Well, other than, well, I mentioned the 24 votes that were added for Franken.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the other most notable event this week in Minnesota was Norm Coleman's news that, in fact, he has been, let me get the quote exactly here. He said, quote, this was on a Wingnut radio show. Quote, God wants me to serve. So Norm Coleman believed God wants him to serve, apparently, as a U.S. Senator. No explanation as for why God seems to have given more votes to Norm Coleman's challenger, Al Franken. But anyway, that's where Norm Coleman believes. I hope that Norm Coleman and God will not be disappointed, but it's looking like that's going to be the case.
Well, the Lord, she works in mysterious ways.
Yes, she does.
Okay. And Brad, let's just before the break here take care of a couple of things that we didn't get to last week.
Yeah.
One is the long-running case in Arizona where election activists like John Brakey have been challenging a local election there that they believe was flipped. It was about a tax for transit. What is the update on those ballots that they have been watching?
Yeah, this is a troubling case because they went to court down there to get the Diebold databases from the county. The county asserted, oh, we can't let you have them. They're proprietary. They're going to reveal all kinds of security issues and everything else. The judge disagreed with Diebold and with the county and allowed them finally to get at those databases, and they've been looking at those databases now for the past year or so. They even developed a tool to be able to go through them on the computer, find possible flags, red flags that could indicate fraud. They believe that race was, in fact, rigged. Well, the good news is there are paper ballots from that race. They sit in the office of the county treasurer, and what they've now been trying to do, incredibly, for the past several months, is get the damn ballots counted by hand so that they can compare it and find out, did someone, in fact, game that database on the computers? They've got the ballots. They want to have them counted. Now, however, the county treasurer says she's got to destroy the ballots unless a judge gives an order for her to keep them. The judge has refused so far to give an order to count them. And last week, the judge came out with a finding that he doesn't have the jurisdiction to order those ballots to be retained or for the ballots to be counted. So at this point, right now, those ballots are in danger of being completely destroyed. We may never know if, in fact, they were rigged despite the red flags they found in that database. So it's quite troubling, and the folks in Pima County are doing a hell of a job to fight to keep it alive, and it would be absolutely insane to destroy those ballots without counting them, but we've seen a whole lot more insanity in this issue and certainly down there in Pima County in the past.
Brad Friedman with us. Read all about it at bradblog.com as we continue. We'll try to fit it all in. Karl Rove subpoenaed again. Ann Coulter with a voter fraud allegation again. Against her, by the way. And other news, too. It's all coming up. Plus, Ion Sancho from Florida will join us in about 10 minutes. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Hello, this is Solazar.
Hi, I'm Kirilani.
Good Vibration.
Tools for Transformation
is being preempted by sports programming this month.
We'll run encore presentations of some of your favorite shows on the internet, so tune in. Good Vibration.
Saturdays from 7 to 9 p.m.
on AM 540 KRXA.
Good evening, everybody. This is Fia with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather. In Monterey County on Highway 68 at Spreckles Boulevard, a vehicle has crashed into the center divide. Use caution there. There's lots of debris in the road. And on the southbound one, on the eastbound Highway 68 off-ramp, we have a traffic collision with no injuries. Moving on up to Santa Cruz, on the northbound one, just south of Highway 17, there's a palm tree branch in the number one lane. In weather, it's mostly cloudy with some occasional showers on the central coast and in the valleys this afternoon. We're expecting more rain this evening and for temperatures to drop down into the low 40s. That's your traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a wonderful evening, everyone, and keep it tuned to the Peter B. Colton Show.
Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. Seattle, Portland, Missoula, Montana. It's great to have you listening. Why don't you let me know what you think? Email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. And if you don't have the internet, here's my snail mail address. It's Box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. That's Box 100. And the zip code 94942 in scenic Mill Valley, California. We continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, Ion Sancho from Florida coming up in about 10 minutes. And, Brad, before we get to the juicy stuff about Rove and Ann Coulter, briefly, tell us about the California county that is still counting votes from last November.
Yeah, this is an amazing story as well. Again, one of these counties that just the story never ends. Riverside County, one of the worst places to vote in the nation. Down there near San Diego, you may recall they were the first to go to touchscreen voting machines for the entire county back in 2000. They've recently had to move back to paper ballots following California Secretary of State Deborah Bowen's ruling that touchscreen machines can only be used in general, one per precinct for disabled voters. Well, some way or another, Riverside County had 72,000 people use those machines. And I think Ion will tell us when he joins us. I believe they only had 18,000 across the state of Florida. In any case, when the California Secretary of State here determined that you can use them one per precinct, but if you do, you must manually count every paper trail that comes off of those machines. Well, they had 72,000 to count in Riverside. The registrar down there, Barbara Dunmore, certified the election 28 days after the November date as being full, true, and correct. But what she didn't tell anybody was they hadn't yet done their manual count of those paper trails from the touchscreens. And as of, well, just the week before last, she apparently was still counting those things in secret. And the news broke, and the election integrity advocates down there were furious that she was doing so in secret, filed a complaint with the Secretary of State who had no idea. And finally, we can report just at the end of, well, earlier I think this week, she finally finished up the counting, and one of the reasons, excuses she gave for not counting sooner was the cost to do so. Trouble is, the rules for using those machines by Deborah Bowen say that the voting machine companies must pay for that additional manual counting because of the flaws in their system.
Mm-hmm.
However, Riverside is now refusing to bill the Sequoia Voting System Company some $160,000 that it's cost them to count those ballots in just November alone, and they didn't bill Sequoia for the previous two elections last year either. This, while Riverside is facing a $90 million budget shortfall this year.
So in the certified results, did she plug in the computer count numbers, or did she just skip those 72,000 votes?
Well, I think she plugged in the computer numbers, the numbers that they were given on election night by the computer.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news is, when she finished her counting, she informed everyone that, what do you know, the counts were exactly the same as the computer had reported them on election night. No problems at all. And please don't bother our friends at Sequoia and make them pay up the money that they are required to pay.
Wow.
It's absolutely amazing. It's incredible that that woman down there still has a job as registrar in Riverside County. It's amazing.
That is amazing. And our time is tight here. Karl Rove has been subpoenaed again by John Conyers at the House Judiciary Committee. A date as early as February 23rd for an appearance. And we have mixed messages from Rove. He gave that speech in Los Angeles where he read a statement from his attorney that said that he had privilege. Yet his attorney has said if it's about the Siegelman case, Rove will show up. So,
right, and they're asked for another delay, and the rather amusing statement from Conyers' letter that was attached to the subpoena today to Rove's lawyer said, given Mr. Rove's public statements that he does not intend to comply with the subpoena, I am puzzled as to why Mr. Rove needs a mutually convenient date to fail to appear.
Well written. We'll continue with Brad Friedman. We'll give you the update on Ann Coulter, and then we'll talk with Ion Sancho. That's all coming up next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Summer in Santa Cruz, you just can't beat it. It's time for friends, family, fun, and food. Whether it's an afternoon barbecue or a dining room banquet, it all begins with getting the best quality food at the best prices. For nearly 70 years, Shoppers Corner Market has delivered both. Shoppers Corner is the oldest family-owned and operated independent grocery store. It's where the locals shop.
I like their meat department. That's what I buy here.
They have a good organic selection.
Things you can't find other places.
Enjoy the friendliest service and fastest checkout at Shoppers while taking advantage of the everyday low prices on USDA choice meats, fresh local seafood, and produce.
Their produce is great. Actually, I shop around quite a few different places, but I always come back here because they have the best.
The variety of stuff you find here you don't find other places, and the service.
Shoppers has a vast assortment of cheeses and specialty foods, along with one of the best wine selections in the Monterey Bay area. Shoppers Corner, on the corner of Soquel Avenue and Branson 40 in Santa Cruz, or visit them online at shopperscorner.com.
I shop here because of the fact I live around the corner.
Shoppers Corner, it's where the locals shop.
Just because gas prices are low doesn't mean our troubles are over. Mother Nature's getting hot under the collar, our economy is in the toilet, and we're spending billions overseas to fill our tanks. Both kinds. Did you know local people have sold locally made fuel on the Central Coast since 2002? At the Green Station, our biodiesel is ASTM approved and is made from restaurant fryer oil collected right here. Did you know that electric cars were first built in the 1830s? Almost 200 years later, and our government still has plenty of money for oil wars, but not enough to jumpstart our renewable energy economy. 70% of all car trips in America can be done in a neighborhood electric vehicle. This will help save our planet and save you money. Zen neighborhood electric cars are at the Green Station now, and they can be charged by the sun. From local biodiesel to electric cars, bikes, and scooters, renewable transportation and a more peaceful world are just a call away. Call the Green Station today in Santa Cruz at 831-425-9100. Major credit cards are now accepted. That's 831-425-9100. Again, that's 831-425-9100.
And protect your investment.
Custom painting.
Call Don Dickman Painting for a free estimate.
Don Dickman Painting, serving Monterey Peninsula and the Big Sur Coast.
Quality paint jobs and green painting solutions are fast and affordable.
call 667-2144. For a free estimate, call 667-2144. That's 667-2144. I'm Don Dickman. When quality counts, let us protect your investment. You're in good hands.
With Don Dickman Painting.
We're at www.dondickmanpainting.com.
Cornucopia Landscaping in Santa Cruz is a complete design, installation, and maintenance company. Cornucopia Landscaping specializes in water-saving gardens which retain a lush appearance. You can have fruit trees, grapevines, fresh vegetables, and many beautiful ornamental plants while using very little water. In fact, an entire cornucopia landscaping garden sips only as much water in a season as a lawn of equal size gulps down in 1 week. Drip irrigation is the key to a water-saving garden. Are you looking for a beautiful flagstone pathway? Cornucopia Landscaping builds decks, patios, arbors, fences, retaining walls, planter boxes, and many other custom-built wooden structures. Serving Santa Cruz County since 1996. For more information or a consultation, call Davis at 831-335-1209. That's 335-1209. That number again is 335-1209.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
In Peter B.'s America, should you ever appoint me emperor, we'd use hand-counted paper ballots. And we could believe our election results.
Colors on the street, red, white, and blue. People shuffling their feet. People sleeping in their shoes. There's a warning sign on the road ahead. There's a lot of people saying we'd be better off dead. Don't feel like Satan, but I am the man. So I try to forget any way I can. Keep on rocking the free world.
In just a moment, the legendary, I've been told to say that,
yeah,
the legendary Ion Sancho will join us here on the PBC show as we continue with Brad Friedman from the estimable bradblog.com. But we teased you about Ann Coulter, and she's such a tease herself that I don't want to drag it out any further. People will recall that Brad reported to us, two years ago, that Ann Coulter was being investigated for voter fraud, not election fraud where you flip the election, but voter fraud where you illegally register. And this was a case where she was living in New York but voting in Florida, and that was one that you revealed. And now she has another front to defend. This is a registration in Connecticut.
Well, yeah, actually, you may have conflated a couple of ideas there. She not only registered in the wrong place down in Florida, she gave the address of her real estate agent in Florida instead of her actual home in Palm Beach County, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But she voted at the wrong place, knowingly.
Okay.
She went there. She was told, oh, no, this isn't where you signed up to vote. She said, well, where am I supposed to vote if I lived at this address? And they explained to her where, and she ran out, and that was that. She could have changed her address right then and there, but she didn't. That was a third-degree felony and a first-degree misdemeanor that she got off the hook eventually because her boyfriend in the FBI called up and told the Palm Beach County Sheriff that, oh, the reason she had to give the wrong address is because she was being stalked. Now, that supposed stalker was named by the FBI, and it turned out to be a Brad Blog guest blogger. You may recall Dan Borchers,
a
Christian conservative, who is none too happy with Ann Coulter, believes that she gives conservatives a bad name. Well, he comes into play in this new round as well because, as it turns out, prior to her moving to Florida, you're right, she did live in New York City,
mm-hmm.
and yet in 2002 and 2004, it appears, she voted in Connecticut via absentee ballot. And Connecticut has specific rules that if you have residency elsewhere, you cannot vote here by absentee. That made it into the New York Daily News. And at the time, the Connecticut election official said, well, if somebody files an official complaint, we'll do an investigation into this. Well, our old friend Dan Borchers, the same fellow who was named as a stalker by the FBI, by Ann Coulter's boyfriend at the FBI,
mm-hmm.
He is not a stalker, and we'll have some more information on that next week, but he filed an official complaint in Connecticut, and Connecticut is now, once again, investigating Ann Coulter for committed voter fraud twice,
mm-hmm.
according to the official complaint, which we have at BradBlog. And when we bring in Ion here, I'd love to get his opinion on this as well, since that original allegation took place down in Florida, and Palm Beach County didn't do much about it. I wonder what Ion would have done.
Well, we'll bring Ion in. I just want to make a point here that we'll drive. It's going to spike traffic at BradBlog. People have got to come and see this picture that you have lifted from a video. It says from TMZ. These got to be the skinniest legs in the Western world.
Pretty creepy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It comes from a TMZ video just last week. I mean, she looks like an alien, doesn't she?
Really? Yeah, I mean, E.T. has thicker limbs than that.
Someone get this woman a sandwich. I do hope she's okay.
Ion Sancho, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, you still think so?
I certainly do. How can I complain with anyone whose intro song is one of my favorite songs ever recorded?
Oh, well, good. I'm glad you like that. Neil Young's Rockin' in the Free World.
You got it.
So do you have a comment to kick off here about Ann Coulter's alleged voter fraud violations?
Well, it turns out that the individual who was the supervisor of elections in Palm Beach County when the activities that were, I think, improper took place was in a jurisdiction that had a brand-new election official. And that official, I think, simply was not really aware of how to pursue this issue and was very deferential to Ms. Coulter and basically waited for her to self-report her criminality, which is not how you generally pursue these kinds of actions.
I don't know. It's been really effective on Wall Street, Ion.
Well, you don't want me to go in that direction. I'm not sure what would be effective with Wall Street. We have to relearn that maybe greed is not the greatest good for our society.
Indeed, yeah.
Now Ion, the election official you're talking about, I believe, is Arthur Anderson down there, and I believe he lost his last. I believe that's an elected position down there where he is.
It is elective, and unfortunately, Arthur kept hidden from the citizens that he had contracted cancer.
Mm.
Oh, and he essentially, for the last year, was not functional in that office.
Mm.
And in this past election cycle, after the primary, the Palm Beach County Commission essentially had to take over the operation of the elections office.
Mm.
Mr. Anderson was not even in the office for the last month.
Interesting, and gives me a bit of a new outlook, because I had spoken with him about this matter about a year ago. He seemed like a very nice fellow, seemed rather exhausted by it after the FBI had said, had instructed Palm Beach County Sheriff to dismiss the case, and then eventually went to the Florida Election Commission, and they waited long enough that they decided the statute of limitations had run out on that case. But that might explain why he was, you know, he was troubled by it, but he didn't seem like, he seemed a bit exhausted that he didn't want to take the extra measures himself to report it to the Florida Election Commission. Is that the sort of thing that, had it been brought to your attention, Ion, up there in Leon County, that you would have requested an investigation or prosecution be taken on?
Yes, but I would have gone to criminal authorities at the state's attorney's office. Unfortunately, I, as an election official who's watched what's occurred in Florida for the past 20 years, the Florida Elections Commission is a highly partisan body. I've been told directly by the former general counsel of that agency that it depended on my party affiliation as to what the outcome of a decision would be.
Ooh.
And that's really not appropriate, but that's what you have when you have these kinds of bodies who are controlled by the governorship of a state. Much as Governor Palin's own commission whitewashed her, the governor under Florida rules appoints and controls the Florida Elections Commission. And I don't take any complaints there. You've got to go to independent legal authorities like state's attorneys if you really want to pursue election violations. Because at the state level, we just don't have the kinds of controls which limit partisan control over the operation.
And, Ion, that hasn't changed under Charlie Crist, because from way out here, it appears that for a Republican, he's fairly good on election integrity issues.
He is very good on election integrity issues, but there's some things that just don't change. And if you look at his channeling his inner Republican, you can see with the appointment to the Florida Supreme Court, a former U.S. Congressman, Kennedy, who led the House impeachment of Bill Clinton.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of the legal issues of the state, he has placed very, very conservative Republicans as his last three appointments to the Florida Supreme Court. While he is a moderate himself, this is, in my opinion, how he placates the right-wing base of the Republican Party in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
On the notion of these appointed election officials by the governor, I don't know if you've got an opinion on this or thought. Let me run this by you. Down in Broward County, I believe, there's an election integrity advocate who ran for supervisor of elections down there. And she was, Ellen Brodsky is her name.
Yes.
She was, I believe you know her. She was recently arrested, we've got it on video, this ridiculous charge of trespassing and so forth while she was trying to watch the counting of votes following the November election in which she lost. But the election director down there, Brenda Snipes, is a Democrat, but was appointed just before the 2004 election by Jeb Bush. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are, if you have any, on that. Why was, for one, that Jeb Bush would appoint a supposed Democrat to that position down there in Broward County? And if you have any thoughts on this, what I think is an outrageous arrest of Ellen Brodsky.
Well, let me address the first matter you raise. I don't know why the governor appointed her. I'm simply not privy to that kind of level of political decision making. However, it is terribly troubling to me that an individual who is a candidate for an elections office is prohibited from doing the most basic thing to protect her interest, which is to simply observe a Florida canvassing board discuss the tabulation of the results. And I think this is a case where the local election official has abused her authority. We have tremendous authority as elected officials. We are part of the apparatus of the county, and in fact, I think that Ms. Brodsky was essentially prosecuted because she annoyed her opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had to...
Go ahead, Brad. That's what it appeared like to me. Go ahead, Brad.
Well, I'm sorry?
I was just saying that was the appearance to me from looking at the video and hearing Ellen Brodsky's account of the events.
Well, yeah. Have you ever had a case, Ion, in Leon County, through your experience, where you had to exclude a citizen from observing a count after an election?
Never, never. I've been an election official in an elected position there in Leon County for 20 years, and I've never had to arrest anyone for their behavior. But, you know, I understand that there is no constitutional right not to be annoyed. And unfortunately, if you wield a powerful position, you may want to punish people who bother you, but you shouldn't use that authority for that purpose. And I think that Ms. Brodsky has an excellent chance of having legal redress in this issue.
Very interesting. Let me sneak in a phone call here. Steve in Watsonville has been holding for almost ever. Go ahead, Steve.
Thanks, Peter, Brad, and Eon. And by the way, I got a copy of The Truth with Chokes autographed, so you can bet your bottom dollar I'm in favor of a suitable outcome in Minnesota.
Right.
But back in, I think it was election of 2002, I changed my party from Green to Democrat, and I didn't get my sample ballot on time, so I contacted the county. They told me that I had violated the Help America Vote Act because I hadn't checked off I'm a U.S. citizen.
Oh.
And they had set my ballot aside, or my registration aside, and I went down to the county to investigate as to why I hadn't been re-registered. And they discovered it miraculously on top of their stack of people that they were going to call. They have to set these registrations aside, according to HAVA, and call the people that registered or that tried to register, like they did with me, get them to come down or somehow rectify the matter.
But
now, why couldn't we do that with absentee ballots? Why couldn't we have Congress pass a bill right now that says, this thing in Minnesota is never going to happen again?
That's a great question and a great one for Ion here, because I've had trouble throughout not just the Minnesota contest going on, but for some time when I see how easily we tend to toss out absentee ballots. Election officials sometimes look at the signature. They're not experts in this, yet they decide, oh, that signature doesn't look to be a match with the registration. I'm just going to throw it out, and they don't give any recourse to the voters to come in and prove themselves. Do you guys have to? How does that work in Florida, Ion? And how would you recommend we do this throughout the country?
Well, you stated correctly in that the procedures vary all across the country, and this is a huge problem. It's even frustrating for election officials. But in Leon County, up until the 2004 presidential election, we would notify every absentee ballot voter who a question has been raised over whether their ballot should be counted. And we would publish that list of absentee ballot problems. We did not, because the numbers can be large, we don't contact them. But what we do is we make those lists public, and we contact the parties. And we tell the parties that if you can contact these voters and they can contact our office, we can correct the problem. And that's what the parties did in the 2004 presidential election. They contacted the people who may have forgot to sign the ballot or may have not updated their signature. And these people actually came to the canvassing board, that local entity that accepts or rejects the absentee ballot count. And everyone who appeared had their ballots counted.
All right, we need to run to a break, gentlemen, so stand by, and we'll continue with Ion Sancho. He's the elections chief from Leon County, Florida, and Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Good evening, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now in Monterey County on Espinosa Road at Highway 183, there's a traffic hazard. And there's a no-injury collision on Highway 68 at County Road G17. A car has crashed into the center divide. It looks like they're cleaning up that accident now, but watch out, there's still a lot of debris in the road. In weather, it's mostly cloudy with some scattered showers throughout the Tri-County area. We've got highs in the low 50s, and we're expecting more rain tonight. On Saturday, Valentine's Day, we'll have a few showers early in the day with overcast skies later. In the evening, we'll have more rain with lots of winds and temps in the mid-40s. On Sunday, we'll have more wetness. That's your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather. Have a wonderful Valentine's weekend, and stay with the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
There's more than one side to every issue. In fact, there's usually more than two sides. On Thursday nights from 9 to 11, we examine issues from every angle on our show called A Different Perspective. Sometimes we have guests bring a viewpoint that isn't often heard elsewhere. Other times we'll discuss our different perspectives on the issue of the day. Either way, call in and give us your different perspective. Join us, Mark Leonard, Tony Rudy, Billy Sunshine, and me, Jack Hart, on A Different Perspective, Thursday nights at 9, here on KRXA 540.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. We're with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com and the amazing Ion Sancho, an election official. He runs him in Leon County, Florida, and has been very honest and really straightforward about these issues when we've talked with him on many occasions in the past. And we've got Dave on the line from Eureka, listening on KGOE. Go ahead, Dave.
Gentlemen, all evidence to me suggested that the cons fully intended to hang on to the White House and rig yet another election. And yet we got Obama. So I'm wondering if any of you have any insight into what happened.
All right, Dave, interesting question. Let's turn to Ion. Dave comes from a bit of a partisan angle there, but, you know, he has an interesting point. And let me ask you the converse as well, which is, because Obama won, can we have confidence that our election system worked this time?
So I would like to say that one thing was in play, and that was that Florida actually had a more fair and impartial elections administration. The appointment by Governor Crist of Kurt Browning, a former supervisor of elections himself, who I believe is completely nonpartisan, really made a major change in the administration at the state level. And Kurt Browning's number one priority was that Florida not fumble and blow the election in 2008. And we didn't. We voted 8.3 million voters. And we did it without long lines, and we did it as we should have. As to the insecurities and problems that we have in the voting equipment, they're still there. Those haven't gone away, and it'd take much more action by citizens and state legislatures to change that. Or, in my preferred method, because I want to complete one thing, I no longer can do that program of trying to save voters who've made simple mistakes on their absentee ballots because a Republican-dominated legislature changed the law in 2005, and all ballots that were similarly situated in 2004 are no longer allowed to be counted. And it was a clear partisan effort by the Republican-controlled legislature in Florida to make sure that voters who make mistakes have a fewer percentage of their ballots counted. And primarily, who makes mistakes? Older voters, less educated voters. And the Republican legislature concluded that that would have an impact more on the other party than their party.
Yeah.
And this kind of partisan manipulation by state legislatures is what has to stop. It makes no difference if I create an innovative program and then the legislature hears about it and comes back and bans it. And I'm tired of this kind of partisan manipulation of the elections process. Americans need to start demanding that all legal Americans have the right to cast a ballot and have that vote counted as he or she intended. And we've got to stop pussyfooting around here.
Yeah.
This
Brad,
is a problem.
Brad, I got time for one more. I'm sorry, Ion. We're tight for time. Go ahead, Brad.
Well, that's okay. I'm actually going to toss a quick question back to him, and you see why I call him legendary, Peter.
Real quick, Ion,
we're running out of time here, but I know you're in town, I think in San Francisco, for an election officials conference this week. What's the general sense you're getting? Are the election officials getting it, getting what you just said about the continuing problems with electronic voting?
Yes, even though the head of the election center is for electronic voting, he admitted before the group today that probably there is not any return to all electronic voting for the next two decades. And as far as I'm concerned, that's good. So I think election officials are getting it. Election officials are frustrated by the problems that they have counting their legal voters' votes as well. And one of the things that I came away with of the conference today was that election officials are open to having more controls to guarantee fairness to voters' voting. We must give up some of our independent power to ensure that the citizens' power is maintained.
Yeah.
That's good news as long as they're beginning to get the message on electronic voting. Now we got to start worrying about internet voting. So you folks up listening on KPOJ, run across the border to Washington and give them your 2 cents, because Washington State is now talking about internet voting as if things haven't gotten bad enough. But we'll pick all of that up next week, I suspect.
All right, Brad, thank you very much. Ion, a real pleasure to talk with you again, and thank you for your straightforward approach to these issues.
Thank you.
All right, good to talk with you. Ion Sancho from Leon County, Florida. Read Brad at bradblog.com. Talk to you next week, Brad.
See ya.
Happy trails to you until we meet again.
Bonjour, this is Véronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy 2 bottles, you get 1 bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Tom Foley. Why did a commuter plane from Newark, New Jersey fall 6 miles short on its way to Buffalo in bad weather? 6 miles, that meant death for all 49 aboard and a man on the ground. CBS's Cammy McCormick saw on the scene.
The cockpit voice recording shows as the flight was descending, the crew began talking about reduced visibility and significant ice buildup on the windshield and edges of the wings. This is even after the plane's de-icing mechanism had been switched on. The crew was allowed to descend, the landing gear was lowered, and seconds later, the flaps activated to slow the plane for landing. Then, within seconds, the aircraft began to roll and pitch. The crew then attempted to raise the gear and flaps, and the recording ended.
Continental Connection Flight 3407 hit a suburban Buffalo house, nose first. Karen Wielinski did not think she would survive there.
The first thing I said to myself was, you know, is this real? You know, is this reality or am I dreaming something? And I knew it was real, and I didn't think I was going to get out of there. I mean, I thought this is it.
She did survive, but her husband did not. There was a crash landing in London after landing gear trouble for a British Airways jet, one minor injury there. One side of Congress has approved the compromise version of the president's economic stimulus plan. The other side, the Senate, is expected to act tonight. First vote was in the House, and it was strictly partisan. CBS News congressional correspondent Bob Fuss reports from Capitol Hill.
While insisting they, too, are worried about the economy and care about the thousands losing their jobs each week, Republicans were nearly unanimous in opposing President Obama's bailout bill. House Republican leader John Boehner said, for the good of the country, he hopes it works, but doesn't think it will.
But a bill that was supposed to be about jobs, jobs, jobs has turned into a bill that's all about spending, spending, and spending.
But spending, Democrats counter, is exactly what economists say is needed to spur the economy. And they say they won't go back to President Bush's economic policy of relying solely on tax cuts. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
In Iraq, a female suicide bomber...